Have you done your silence?
Yes.
Your meditation?
I have off-centered myself.
Cool. A bit of a wobble.
Always. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Sneaky Dragon. My name is David Dedrick.
I'm Ian Boothby. Welcome. Nailed it.
We didn't, because I was going to speak, and then you said, nailed it. We failed it, as usual.
Sure.
We just seem to have a
nailed
stumbling...
Nailed it or failed it, yep.
We seem to have a stumbling...
By the time we get to 300, we'll be fine.
Do you like
watching... What number is this, by the way?
287.
Lovely.
Do you like watching fail videos?
It depends how badly the people get hurt. If they get hurt to a point where like they're really hurt, no thank you. Goofy hurt, yeah, okay.
You watch that. I prefer nail it videos. I like watching people succeed.
Okay.
Like I like when someone does like, only thing I don't like about it is my only caveat to that is okay. I do not like when people do things and they turn to the camera and go, yeah, or and point at the camera and go, that's how you do it or something like that, you know.
Right.
Like if someone's like, you know, frisbee 200 feet into the basketball net.
Right.
And they throw it, they do a hammer toss, goes right into the net and then turn the camera and go, yeah.
Yeah, because you know they've done it like 75 times.
That's right.
Times
or even if they didn't, you don't know. So just play it. Here's the thing. Mm-hmm. When you do something like that, act like you do it all the time. You don't need to make a big fuss about it.
Here's what I think you should do. So you do the thing where you get the basketball and it's like really far away, like super far. And you do the toss and it goes in.
Yeah.
And it goes in and then you pee your pants.
Why? Right? Why do you pee
your
pants?
Because you pee your pants in delight of what it is, but then it also becomes a fail video. It's just like, oh, look, he also peed his pants. Double down and you cover two markets.
Why do you want to watch people fail, though?
What's that?
So you're not interested in seeing people like make a basket or...
it's weird. The bacon in the basket doesn't really do anything for me because it's, if it was in an actual basketball game, I would like to see that. That'd be fun. Mm-hmm. Or if it was realistically, it's someone actually just was videotaping a game and something amazing happened.
Yeah,
that's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
But when it's one of those things where you're tossing over your shoulder and it's going in. Again, you know they've done 100 of these videos and you're just showing me the one that made it.
Yeah.
So what's that mean?
Like a compilation of a whole bunch of that kind of stuff. I enjoy it.
Yeah. I just go like, that's a lot of time of,
That's fine though.
It's fine, but it's not nothing. It's just odds. You know, it's like if I went to
the
bowling alley
and I just
went bowling and I only showed you all the times I had strikes and I showed you 10 strikes in a row.
But,
and then I went king of the lanes and then walked off. Well, you wouldn't like that because that's braggy. So I get 10 strikes in a row and I go, hey.
Yeah,
you know,
that's what I do.
It's good. Did you enjoy seeing that?
I wouldn't mind if you said King of the Lanes, actually, if you did that. But if you turned to me and went, that's how you do it, then I would feel like, nah, don't need it.
That's how you do it? You record 100 times doing it?
Do a fist pull. But, I mean, that's an interesting thing, that you assume that's what it is.
Of course it is. Like, how
But how do you know?
Be?
How do you know? But how do you know?
What else could it be?
Are you saying that no one is talented? Like, no one could throw a basketball over their shoulder and get it into a hoop?
Mm-hmm.
That's impossible to do. Like no single person on earth could
All right, let's play the odds game.
But why is it always the odds game? Like it seems
to
me that
you
are
the odds
just...
game. That's why it's an odds game.
I feel like
the math.
that's just
mathematically. That's the odds game. If you see someone doing something like that, you're right. There is a microscopic chance that they're just amazing and happen to go, hey,
that's
why
right.
don't you film me doing this one thing
there
that
are.
I do great?
Yeah,
fantastic. Or you could be like every other video that does this, which online, which is you do it 100 times and then you nail the one thing, you go hooray.
Yeah.
And it's fine.
But there are some amazing.
It brings you joy. I'm not going to suck the life out of it for you. Enjoy it. Good stuff. Good on it.
But I just think it's weird that you deny that there's people who like are amazing athletes that could do that.
Well, of course I didn't. So that would be ridiculous that you just said that. I didn't.
But you were in a way, like by saying,
no,
by
I'm
just
not.
Saying, it's always 100
times. Nothing you just said there was true. That made no sense what you just said.
I think if people listen to what you said, they would agree with me.
But before we get into that, I think we've got a siren going by. And as per the show's rules, we have to, it went away. As per the show's rules, nothing happens at this point. No, I didn't say there wasn't amazing athletes, but I don't think an amazing athlete necessarily would go, hey, let me videotape myself doing this thing and throw it in this thing.
It's
coincidentally, I want to do it in the same way that at least 1,000 other videos online that you will see at the side of me have kind of bullshitted their way through. But me, the one guy who can really do it.
It is.
Yeah.
It is tricky. It is hard to know for sure.
That is not denying amazing athletes exist. Of course they exist.
Yeah. And I think that when you And I think it's fun to watch people do, and not just the basketball under the hoop thing, but if someone can do like a standing backflip or can do an amazing jump on a bike or a skateboard or...
That's a different situation.
I would rather watch someone...
A person who can do a backflip can do a backflip and probably isn't doing 100 times and just trying to see if they actually do a backflip because they'll die, right?
So that's fine.
That's
right.
I'm with you on that.
He's wearing a neck brace and he's still trying to get the backflip.
Yeah.
That'd be good, actually, if the finally nails it and he's just like a wreck. He's got a broken leg, his neck is in a brace.
I'm just picturing two of his friends run in and go, oh, fuck it, and just grab him and slowly rotate him until he just lands back down.
My brother and his friend could do standing backflips.
Mm-hmm.
So it is, but it's possible to do. It's not possible to do for people like me that are basically like an enormous giraffe. Like, we cannot do standing backflips because we just do not have the... We're too tall and our musculature can't handle
this
that kind of...
This seems to be a thing that early teenagers can do.
Mm-hmm.
But children can't. Children can't. Like, if you're a five, you can't.
Your muscles have to catch up to
that's
you.
That's right. So there's like a just a real golden window there where you can try one. And so when you're practicing to do a backflip, how do you do that? Do you go in the backyard or do you go on some mattresses? Or what do you do? Because you're going to have some bad times before you nail that.
Yeah, I don't
that's
know.
That's a real
I
rough
have never...
one.
You know, I'm going to say that you just do it.
Where? On the grass?
Yeah, you just do it. Yeah, there's a guy at work.
Well, you do it with your hands. Then you have to have your hands out to block it a little bit. You can't do the tuck in because you're going to land really badly. And
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Like, I know with my brother, he was just an amazing athlete who could, like, do amazingly athletic things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, someone gave us a unicycle when we were kids. We were teenagers. They're like, no one here can figure out how to ride this stupid thing. You guys take it. So we had this unicycle at home. None of us, I couldn't figure it out. But my other brother, he just hopped on it. And in like 20 minutes, he was off riding around the neighborhood on his unicycle. You know, and he just had that athletic ability, you know, that kind of to do it. And he didn't have any horrible falls. You know, he just figured out how to do it.
You don't think he had any horrible falls?
No. I mean, I watched him. I was out there. We were both doing it together.
I bet if you asked him, you know, you have any wipeouts?
I don't know. I mean, he had things where he lost his balance, but he would just quickly put his legs out and, you know, it just catch the unicycle as it fall.
Mm.
You know, so, yeah. I mean, there's people out there. And in terms of, like, doing backflips, it's possible that he did backflips into the pool before he ever did them on land.
That is a good way to do it.
But
you got a diving board.
It's mm-hmm.
a good way to go.
We didn't do the diving board. We do it off the edge of the pool. And I could do backflips from the ledge of the pool. I could do sort of semi backflips.
Yeah.
But I could never do a standing one that and land on my feet. That would
my trick when I was about 10 or 11 was I could do a headstand anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Like on the road.
Yeah.
You know, anything underneath, like in a second, boom, up. And I was fine. I remember at one point I did one and a guy rode over me with his bike because he was a jerk. Just went right over me, like flattened me.
So you could walk on your hands?
Nope, couldn't walk on my hands.
Okay.
Could just do a headstand like here, boom, up, and done.
It's a classic dad joke of mine to boast that I can walk on my hands across the room.
Yeah.
I'll bet anyone's this amount of money that I can walk on my hands across the room and then I just stand on my hands and walk across the room while I stand on my hands. So... it's hilarious.
How long do you do it before it stops being hilarious?
It's a couple feet. You cannot go the whole way. Although that, probably if you did that, it would stop being hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
Then it would sort of get funnier as you got across the room.
Agreed.
It would be one of those things where the longer you did it, the more it would just the complete absurdity of it would rebound to your benefit.
I've been, I spend most of my evenings awake because I'm usually up to around 6 a.m. And so I watch a lot of late night commercials, and late night commercials always start with a fail, and they always start with the same fail, which is the black and white fail. And it's always a product for the elderly, but the first image that you get is a young person failing at something, like trying to get something out of the cupboard and then all the bowls fall. Or they try to
pick when that happens.
Or they try to pick something up and it's too hot.
I hate when that happens.
And they drop it and now they've ruined everything.
Yeah,
but it's always black and white.
Yeah.
It's in black and white, and then it's like, and it's someone who is doing it in such a sloppy way that you're like, well, they weren't even trying. There's nothing to this.
That's right.
And then then they show you the product that will help you.
Yeah.
And I think we've mentioned this on the show before, but what I didn't realize and someone told me, I went, oh, of course, these are for people with disabilities. But people with disabilities don't want to see themselves as, you know, in that first scenario.
Mm-hmm.
So we've just stick a young person in there just being a klutz.
Yeah.
And we're going, it's for young people, but you can use it too. But yeah. It's really not for young people because all the people that you see using it, enjoying it later are older folks.
Yeah.
Yeah. You won't burn your hands with the oven glove. You will not.
the oven mitt.
Or whatever.
They invented an oven mitt. What? Who? What? When did they think of this idea? This is the Ronco oven mitt.
Feels like most oven mitts don't. Like your standard oven mitt that you would buy that's cloth, that doesn't do the job. That burns
it's,
your hands.
It's okay.
You bring a glass casserole out, and you're looking for trouble. And if that gets some liquid on it, that soaks in, and
that's the worst.
You're in some trouble.
It's okay for short bursts. Like if you take it out of the oven and put it on the stovetop, you're okay.
I've got a.
But if you decide you're going to walk around the house carrying your casserole dish, that is not a good idea.
The up glove is not bad. It's got some traction on it. But I like the silicone gloves because, again, they got really good traction, and anything gets on there, it doesn't soak in. The fact that oven mitts can soak in is a flaw in the design of an oven mitt.
Yeah.
You're just asking for some trouble there.
What about me, who just uses a tea towel clumsily placed near and around the...
That's my wife as well. Yeah, she'll just grab like something and just like a tissue and like pick it up. And put it in. I'm like, what's this about?
It's a handful of like 40 tissues in my hand. I left stuff out of the oven.
It always bothers me when I see cooking shows and, you know, you can tell that the cooks are so... hand hardened that they can just grab it with no problem. And they'll never burn, or they'll touch a pan to see if it's hot.
Yeah.
Like in the center of the pan, go, yep, that's hot enough to cook a steak. Mm-hmm. It's like with your fingertips, man. Stop it.
Are you bath hardened? Can you get into a really, really hot bath with no problem?
Bath hardened. I don't know if I enjoy a bath that much.
I cannot. It's just, it's just horrible to me. I guess a hot, I don't really enjoy it, but I guess I could. Mm-hmm. I don't see the point of it, but I don't.
Yeah. I suppose I am. I suppose I could do that. It's not the best thing in the world for my skin, so
no,
I don't do it.
I prefer the cold water.
You prefer cold water?
I would rather get into a swimming pool than get into a hot tub.
Okay.
Yeah. But I don't mean freezing cold. I don't jump into the Arctic Sea and go for a swim, but
you've never done a polar bear swim.
I've never done a polar bear swim.
Could you do a polar bear swim?
I could do a dog paddle.
There you go. Eh? Hey, folks.
What's wrong? That's
fine.
A good joke.
It's a good joke. You now walk on your hands.
That's a good joke, too.
We'll tell them that joke. It's fine. No, when I see people do the polar bear swim, I can stand cold water. I'm not the biggest fan of it, though. I don't like it. It's unpleasant.
Yeah.
I don't really see the plus of it, you know, on a New Year's Day going out for a polar bear swim.
No, it's a terrible idea.
I don't. Well, you know,
it's
if you enjoy it. It's a community.
It's people who feel guilty.
About
whatever they did the night before.
Isn't it amazing that people don't die? One, not from heart attack, but I mean, because clearly a lot of them are still drunk. Because it's New Year's morning, right?
Yeah, they're still working it off.
Right, they're still working it off. So your body is still doing that illusion of warmth thing, right? So you're out there going, "I'm fine." You're not.
No.
This is exactly what you shouldn't do. Like, it amazes me every year that this still exists, and our city, which is so, hey, you better quit that. Someone might get hurt. Still lets this nonsense go.
It's a pretty good description.
Let a bunch
of
drunks go onto the sea and wish for the best. That just seems like one of those things. Like, how the hell is this still a thing?
Yeah, if you want to picture Vancouver as like a person, it's basically a hippie grandma. That's basically our city. Just kind of, you know, she's got a granola. She's, you know, maybe she smokes pot a little bit. She doesn't tell you.
Yeah, maybe.
But she she's always got some good advice for you. Very passive aggressively though. I don't want to stop you from doing that. I don't want you to stop doing your thing. But are you sure you really, you know, do you want to do that? Because I guess, you know. It's up to you, though, if you want to do it or not. Like, I don't want to stop you from... Shut up.
Yeah, it all seems to be protecting us from something that isn't a problem. Right?
Yes.
And then a bear wanders in and kills us. I'm like, how about that bear? No, we didn't deal with the bear.
Probably. That's a different problem.
The bear?
Well, you know, the bear thing is just because people are building their houses where bears live.
That's true.
The bears are like, well, I don't have to move. Why should I move?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're like, get out of here, bear. Your lease is up.
Yeah, the bear's looking for where to vote.
Like, yeah, that's right. I want to place my vote. Place my firm no against this whole subdivision.
I've been hibernating on this issue for too long.
That's a real problem for bears, is their low voter turnout.
Yeah, because they always have the elections when they're asleep.
That's a problem. Yeah. Oh, they've got them. They got them where they live. Mm-hmm. Bears don't know what to do.
Yeah, in England that changed with the case of State versus Paddington. And, I don't know. I didn't know it would be State. State wouldn't be right.
The famous marmalade crisis.
That's right.
Yes, the whole country came to a stop, came to a standstill.
I like that all the other bears eat honey and he goes for marmalade. Big snob.
He's from Peru.
Is he from Peru?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Did he have marmalade in Peru?
Yes, apparently.
Did he? Oh, I thought it was like that he came here and he was like, they gave him some marmalade and went, this is lovely marmalade. I'm going to stay.
Maybe that's what it is. I don't remember anymore. It's been a long time since I read Marmalade books by Michael Bond, everyone, if you want to look it up and read a Paddington book.
Okay.
That is the author.
I bear challenge you now. Who wrote Rupert the Bear?
Anonymous?
Yeah, it was anonymous. No, I don't know who wrote Rupert the Bear either.
Why would you challenge
because
me?
Because we were talking British bears.
I could
bears.
Have said any name.
There's two damn bears.
Ask me again. Ask me again then.
Okay, Winnie the Pooh.
Winnie the Pooh is A.A. Milne.
Bear, okay. You win.
But you didn't ask me the Rupert
the Bear.
Okay,
the book The Bear, the Canadian book The Bear, where the lady has sex with a bear.
Oh, Jessica East Coaster?
Okay, sounds good. Rupert the Bear.
Rupert the Bear, Nigel Biggsbottom.
See? Yeah. It's fun. Now, did Nigel write all three of the things? Did he write the rhyming bit?
He wrote them
all.
Did
he write the longer bit? And did he write the insanely long novel underneath?
That is why they hired him, was for his versatility. You know, certainly not for his name. It was for his versatility.
I think you might be confusing the author with a character in the book. Perhaps.
Yeah. Sorry, I just had a nightmare's thought that I forgot to turn on the recorder.
And
it's on.
Did that nightmare come true?
Woo, no. Thank goodness.
I had nightmares last night, and it's messed me up all day.
What? Yeah, interesting. So, as a person who does not have nightmares...
Have you always not had nightmares?
I've had maybe one nightmare that I can remember, and it was a vampire one when I was in elementary school.
Oh, what was the vampire nightmare?
I really don't remember very much. No, I just remember waking up, and it was scary because there was like a Count Dracula. It was basically like a Count Dracula sort of a thing.
What era? Scenario. Like Hammer films, Count Chocula?
I think it would have probably been the Frank Langella one.
That's the scariest.
That would have been like sort of in that ballpark of my youth. So that would have been the one I associate. That kind of hip, you know, perhaps discotheque attending Dracula, not the old fashioned sort. And yeah, it was pretty scary. I mean, I woke up as in fear, which is not very usual for me. I usually wake up in sort of a disappointed because it's morning. I have to get up.
Okay. I just like the idea of a little child waking up disapproving every day.
Not disapproving, disappointed.
Oh, yeah. Foo.
Oh,
this
sort of day. Be good. That little already a cynic. No, it was this more.
If there was an internet, I would comment on it right now, but there's not. So, harumph. Off to grade one for me.
It's, I don't know if, you know, I am not a moody person. Like, I'm not a person who wakes up in a good or bad mood. I just wake up and I'm always in a pretty good mood. I don't have, like, I'm not a person who's like, I need my coffee. I just wake up and I'm there.
Yeah, you don't drink coffee.
Well, I don't drink coffee, but I mean, I just get up. I'm just like, time to go. Mm-hmm. And I'm me. I'm not like, it's not like, oh, don't talk to Dave for an hour. He just got up. He's going to be in a bad mood. Leave him alone. Leave Dad alone. He's going to be crabby. No, I'm just me. I don't need time to warm up to the day or whatever.
No, I don't think I wake up in a bad mood. No, I wake up.
You sound uncertain.
Yeah, because
I don't know if people should believe you.
No, I will wake up anxious. I think that's a thing. But I don't wake up in a bad mood. I'm available for talking. When I wake up, I can talk.
Yeah, so you don't have like
I don't think my wife would think I'm a crab when I wake up.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, I'm probably a crab at 3 a.m.
At 3 a.m.
About 3 a.m. I'm still up and I'm a crab at that time of day.
So you're walking sideways.
Yeah, that's right. And I'm delicious when steamed. No, I think that's the time of day where I realize the things that I want to get done, I can't get done.
Yeah.
And I'm starting to get tired, and that frustrates me that I'm tired.
Okay.
Because I would rather get things done.
Yeah.
And that's when kind of the weight of certain things weighs on me. Mm. And it's like, yeah, then I'm a crab.
Yeah, anxiety can be very tiring. Very tiring. I think it's more tiring than anything you can do physically. Because physical tiredness is actually kind of refreshing tiredness. You know that you worked hard and you've completed something in most cases when you have like a physical tiredness. But anxiety is just, you know, it's sort of an overwhelming feeling of ennui that you kind of carry around through the day. Mm-hmm. And it's just exhausting. It takes it out of you. Mm-hmm. And I can see why you'd be feeling crabby if that's what the load you're carrying around. I'm sort of too complacent and blithe to experience this.
You're a blithe spirit.
I'm a blithe spirit. I am literally a blithe spirit, which is probably frustrating for the people around me who are, if I just let them do the worrying for me, you know, that's pretty
Do you think everyone else
jerky.
In your family are more worriers than you?
I would say...
Without spilling the beans on who we're talking about?
Spilling the beans on, yes. In my family, there are people who are have more anxiety than I do, for sure. Yeah. Yeah. It's not something that I mean, I can do it. I mean, you can make me anxious if you want to try. And I do terrible under pressure. I'm terrible under pressure. I'm not an under pressure sort of a person. I don't rise to the occasion.
Okay.
I pretty much fall apart to the occasion. But maybe that's why I just don't want to worry, because it would cause me to fall apart all the time. But yeah, I'm not, like at work, if we have like someone come in, it's like, you know, oh, we don't have this door ready for them. We got to do this door on the move. Guaranteed, I will, you know, fuck it up somehow. Just because I just will skip things that I just normally would do. And maybe it's because I shouldn't say I've only been there for a year and a half, but I've only been there for a year and a half. And maybe part of putting stuff together, it's not ingrained into me as much as it should be. So when I'm doing the order, I'm not, you know, when I'm trying to do it unconsciously, I'm going to miss stuff because I need to be conscious about what I'm doing and going through step by step. And I'm not when I'm rushing. So yeah, when I rush, I always, it's terrible. I'll fall apart. I'm just not a pressure person at all. I don't like it.
Yeah, I had a couple of anxiety things this week. Like, you did a new show on Monday, did the comic book live show.
I'm sorry that I couldn't come.
Yeah, well,
to that.
We're all very angry. And, we talked about you.
I'm sure you did.
No, yeah. No, very, very well. It's very fun. But like, as always with the shows that I do, the worst part is before the show, like before, like, you know, having to kill 45 minutes. So I'm like, I show up to the venue too early, obviously, because I always do. Because I can't be late for things. So, you know, I'm like wandering around Commercial Drive for like a half hour looking for a place to sit, you know, and then you sit and then other people are wanting to sit next to you and talk to you. And they're like, I don't want to talk. And, you know, I got to keep moving. And, there's just an anxiety of like, will people show up? What's going to happen? Who knows? I don't want to. Once the show's going, it's fine.
Yeah.
Because that's all got structure and everything's fine. But everything leading up to it, ugh. It's just bad. The one nice thing that they did do, though, with this theater company, they've got this as a policy. And I'm like, I've always wanted people to do this. Is you stand with the other performers beforehand and you go over kind of a check-in of like what you're willing to do and what you're not. So like person would go, I've got a bad back. So, you know, don't wrench my back. Okay. Yeah, don't jump in my arms.
Yeah.
Someone else was like, you know, I'm okay with a scene if it's a kiss, but make eye contact first so we know that's going to happen. Don't surprise me with that kind of thing. Another person was like, no, I'm not into, you know, don't kiss me on stage.
No contact.
I've got a little bit of problems here, but you can lift me if I got enough notice. That's okay. And we go through everything, you know, and I was saying, you know, occasionally I might have like a mild panic attack, but that means I'm going to step off to the side. Just don't go, hey, buddy, what's going on? You okay? I'll be fine. I'll be able to get myself back into it and come out. But yeah, everyone just describes what they're fine with, what they're not. I would assume you could also do that with subject matter. Like, you know, I don't feel comfortable, you know, in a scene where I'm playing Jesus. So don't make me play Jesus, you know, stuff like that. But yeah, really, it was nice because it was a bonding thing in a way that a lot of the, I don't want to say dumb warm-up exercises, if they work for you, they work for you. But it was a bonding thing in a sincere way that kind of made, okay, now I feel more comfortable with these people. I really am game for doing some stuff. Yeah. And then when we did the show, I did what I always like to do, which is put something personal into it. So because it was a comic book superhero type thing, I asked them all to say a superpower that they had. So one person could had this tendon that could like pop up on their arm, and they said they could flick paper airplanes off it.
Wow.
And that was one thing they could do. And another person was like, I can type while on the phone with a totally different conversation, but I can type something completely different. And my friend Eric Fell, who's been on the show, went,
yes.
I can always be where the SkyTrain doors are going to open up. I'll just stand on the platform. I'm always there.
Okay.
So then we did a series of scenes with them as superheroes and supervillains, and that was their powers.
Okay.
And it just made it really nice and personal and interesting. Mm-hmm. And then we got like a real public domain superhero from Hope Nicholson's book.
Yes.
The Spectacular Sisterhood of Superwomen. And we went to the audience and asked for a way to fight evil, something that's evil in their lives that isn't violent.
Okay.
And so they got like, my landlord won't let me have overnight guests. There we go. And so we did that, and that
sucks.
Yeah, but it was nice, like using a superhero to deal with a real life problem, and audience felt like they were part of the show, and we learned a little bit more about the performers, and it all went to good. And then we just broke out all the silly characters from the 30s and 40s, and that was a really good time.
Yeah. Oh, I'm glad the show went well. Once again, I'm sorry I couldn't make it. I'm just so focused on trying to keep ahead of this or catch up on this coloring gig thing.
Well, I'm all for that.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
But you can tell people what the coloring gig is if you want, like if people don't know.
If people don't know, well, I'm coloring.
You can't say the name of it. That's the only thing.
Okay, well, I'm coloring a book for Ian and Nina Matsumoto, who's also been a regular on the show. So I've been coloring that for the last little while, and I'm I've been writing down. I have a little whiteboard in my studio, and so I've been writing down pages to go, days to go. And let me just say, one number is a lot bigger than the other number.
Understood.
And speaking of anxiety, I'm not going to get anxious about it, though. I'm quite certain that I can catch up to my...
I don't want you being a colorist to give you the blues. Don't get all red-faced about this.
I'm not going to get red-faced about it.
I'm not calling you yellow, Dave, because I think you can rise to the challenge on this. And soon you'll be in the pink.
Yes.
White power. Wait, no, that's not good at all.
Aren't you glad I didn't say white power?
There you go. Fantastic. I'm green with envy that you came up with that, Ender, for this bit. Well done.
Nice. Went to the color spectrum.
I just picture you like...
It's tricky.
I picture you like working so hard on this color stuff, so much so that then when you go to watch TV later, you're like, just black and white films. Black and white. I can't stand this.
No more color.
Yeah.
I have not watched very much. I mean, I have not... This is the problem for me is I am not doing very much right now because I'm just so focused on doing this job. And actually, I really enjoy it. It's quite fun, actually. And it's weird how tricky coloring is. I never realized it till I had to start doing it. It's a totally different art. And it's actually quite a bit harder than you'd think. Like,
what's the hard bits?
I never really appreciated
before. We have a lot of people who do comics listen to the show. Well, a lot of people, I won't say a lot, but a fair amount, do what the Ink Panthers used to suggest with their podcast, which is, you know, it's a podcast you can ink your comic to.
Yeah.
People draw and ink their work.
Sure. Don't ink to our show because you'll laugh too hard and it'll cause your line to go off a little bit.
Yeah. But then you send in a picture of the smoothest lines we've ever seen.
The interesting thing, okay, here's the interesting thing about color is that you can't just like throw willy-nilly a bunch of colors onto the page and hope that they'll look good. I mean, life can do that. Like wherever you go in your life, it's just a mess of colors and you don't really pay attention to that. But if you like just look out your window one day, you'll notice that...
I'm going to do that right now because the window behind you.
You'll notice that it's kind of similar sort of colors that are outside most times. It's green, a lot of greens, a lot of blues, and some grays that kind of match. And that's basically the colors that we have around us most of the time. And then we'll add colors to kind of add a bit of spice. So we'll add some reds and you know, bright yellows and things. And but when you go to color, your colors they have to complement each other. And you can't have too many colors on a page or what you're doing. And so so say you're doing a page that's going to have like purple, yellow, green, and then and you might want a fourth color, so then that would be magenta, would probably be in that. And so that's your limited there. So those are your colors. So now you're going to color all the people on the page, all the objects around them, all the nature around them, those colors. And so you've got to find tones within that. And so then you spend a lot of time like putting colors in and taking colors out and then going, trying it again this way. And then when you settle in stuff, it makes it a bit faster because then you're kind of like, oh, now these people look like this. So, but it's still... The other interesting thing is that the way I do it anyway is you're basically just like redrawing what someone else has drawn. So I'm taking Nina's drawings and I'm like using a little cursor and making little marching ant lines around like a shirt.
Well, you're a little cursor yourself.
I'm a little cursor myself. and then you add the color to that.
What are you coloring in, by the way? What are you coloring in the drawings? What are you using as your program?
You're coloring in Photoshop.
Okay.
That's what I know best.
On a Cintiq screen?
On a Cintiq screen, yeah. I have a little mini, it's like a 13-inch screen. It's not one of the bigger 21 or 24-inch ones. But I find it's perfectly good. I don't miss having like a larger screen. I find it's quite nice, actually. You just have to do a lot more like kind of... moving the drawing around as you're drawing, but it works fine. And then, but what's funny is when you're talking to people who don't work in comics or don't do things with computers, you'll be like, oh, I'm coloring this comic, and it's a lot of work. And they'll be like, oh, what are you doing it on? Are you doing a computer? And you go, yeah. And then they're like totally uninterested. Then, like it's the easiest thing you could do. Like, oh, because their minds must be thinking like, oh, well, that's fine. You just push a button and it does all the coloring for you, right? No, you're still coloring. Like, okay, I'm not physically like moving my head up and down like I'm coloring with a pencil crayon, but I'm still like going to the trouble of like, choosing things and, making color choices and stuff. So yeah, it's weird. It's very odd to me. Like, are you an accountant? Yeah. Oh, it must be really difficult. Do you use a computer? Yeah. Huh? Computer, I guess it's so easy then. Just does all the work for you.
Maybe an abacus.
Yeah, I mean, like, the computers aren't like magic. You still have to make choices and figure things out. Like, it's just weird. But
have people really given you guff for that? Or?
Not that they give you guff, they just totally lose interest. It's just that you can see in their eyes, it's like, huh, computers, wow, simple, easy peasy. I thought you did. I thought it was hard. Now I know it's just easy.
What did they think you were going to use?
I don't know. They thought I was like chiseling it out.
And the, yeah. Those color
brushes. Well, they have no idea. Like they're not bringing anything. They're not bringing an idea
crayons.
To it. Yeah, they're probably thinking like you know, it'd be hard because you're using crayons, or maybe like you oil paint it. Like you have a canvas and you're like painting the comics, and you're like, no, it's not. I mean, it's easier than it used to be. Like it, in the old days, I think that people like had to like cut out colors and like lay them onto the paper, right, to create like for Marvel and stuff like that, like Tintin and things like that. They were watercolored, like they had, you know, they were physically colored on the pages. But I believe that like American comics were done with a different thing, a system with like kind of paper.
Would they color them on the pages proper? Or would they put like a cell or something on top of it and color on the?
I think that they would reproduce the page, so they'd have an ink page and they would reproduce that onto a page to be colored.
Oh, okay, that makes sense.
So they would have
you wouldn't risk it on the original art.
No, that's right. That's right. Some people did. Like there's a Maurice Thieu who did Jules Jourdain, which was like a private eye. Bande dessinée from the 50s, 60s, early 70s, I guess. But he, when he drew it, he would draw, like he would ink it, then he'd flip the page over and on a light table, he would put the colors on the back of the page so the colorists could see the colors that he wanted. And so he could see his lines and he would just add in the colors with watercolor. And then the colorists could just use that as a guide for how he wanted it colored, which is interesting. But there's example of the fact that it wouldn't be the colors wouldn't be coloring on the other side then. They would have a separate piece of paper that they would color onto. And I think with Tintin as well, there was just blank balloons, like word balloons. And then the words would be added. And then they could be easily taken out and other, you know, other languages added.
It's an interesting process. I'm putting together a different comic right now with someone. And she really knows what she's doing.
Uh-huh.
Like, she really knows what she's doing. And it's
like me, you're saying?
Yeah, no, I know. Well, I think we're all learning.
I agree with you. You know. No, you're right. I don't know anything.
Occasionally, when we all get notes from, you know, whatever the company we're working for, and I go, oh, is that how you do it? all right. I guess, you know, I've been working professionally kind of as this for a little over 15 years.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I have no idea that's how most folks did this. All right, whatever you say, you seem to know what you're doing. But it's nice to actually be working with someone who knows the things that they know, and they know them well. And like, it's like, well, we're going to put together a comic. Okay, well, here's how much we can budget for the colorist and the letterer and the this and that and all this stuff. And it's like, oh, all right, very nice.
Wow.
This all kind of makes sense. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all right, here we go. And we were talking yesterday about a logo. And by the end of the day, we had a logo. And it's like, well, we're actually getting stuff done. What the? it's nice.
That is nice, actually. Yes, I've never experienced that.
No, neither have I.
Because we've just been
really.
Rank amateurs our whole lives.
Or it's been like secret, where it's like, you know, you do your part and then out it goes and then, it shows up later. But you don't know the middle ground of how it's all, you don't see how the sausage gets made. Mm-hmm. You just deliver the pigs to the to their final destination.
Mm-hmm.
And just go, there you go, guys. I'm like, what? I thought Charlotte settled this. Yeah, well, Charlotte can't work miracles. Here we go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's also food reality. Yeah, it's weird. You're right. I mean, well, like I say, just rank amateurs. Like, there's things that I can do, and there's things that I can't do.
And but here's the fun part: is like
I can put pages into InDesign.
Here's the difference between an
that's a skill, isn't
amateur
it?
Amateur and a professional. Here's the difference.
Okay.
Did you get paid for it? Hey, welcome to being a professional. The end.
Think that's the difference? I don't know if
that's the difference. Yeah.
But then everyone's unless you're giving away your stuff, then everyone's a professional.
Are they?
Yeah, everyone's getting paid for it, right? If you're selling your mini comics at a con, aren't you saying that aren't they by your definition getting paid for it?
Though I do lettering in them, I would say I am not a professional letterer because no one would hire me separately to letter their books.
Okay.
So I would say like that distinct skill.
Yeah.
I would say no. If someone went like Ian, come and ink my comic. I like your inking so much.
Yeah.
No, that I would not. But I am a professional, I guess, like mini comics. Seller, I suppose. Yeah, I'll give you that.
Okay.
But you could then break it on down and just go like, you know, are you a comics publisher? Well, I published a couple of different comics and maybe that. But if, you know, I kind of break down the separate skills.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
So if you're gonna be a publisher, do you have to publish someone who's not you?
No, I don't think so. You can you can definitely be a self-publisher.
Okay.
Absolutely. Okay. I'd say like a Dave Sim was a publisher.
Yeah.
But then he published other people too. And now we're bringing up Dave Sim again. So there you go.
That's for Marcus.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of coloring, just real quick.
Yeah, yeah.
I was looking at some Alex Ross. You know Alex Ross?
The painterly comic artist.
He did a series of Justice League, kind of from the waist up, pictures yes. that were posters and okay. quite popular. But they're all like with their arms folded
okay.
and looking to the side.
Yeah.
And I realized when I was looking at them the other day, they all look like real estate photos.
Maybe those were his models.
I don't know if they were or not, but Supergirl especially yeah. looks like a real estate, you know, she'll sell your home on Candor. Yeah. She'll get it done.
Yeah.
And like Batman as well. And it's just like, oh, I'd love to see some like benches with these characters on.
Yeah, yeah.
Just like
yeah.
selling real estate. Having trouble moving your home in Gotham because of all the murder?
Yeah.
Talk to Batman. He'll get you a good price.
Well, his characters do have that because they are kind of, they're not modern looking superheroes. They're more kind of 50s style. They're kind of like Wayne Boring, Kurt Swan, Superman as seen through the semi-realistic watercolor style of Alex Ross,
mm-hmm.
if you know what I mean. Like, it's not like a John Byrne Superman or whoever, John Byrne, as if that's modern. It's not a modern artist whose name I don't 80s. Know.
It's more modern than Wayne, than Boring.
Yeah.
It's more modern than Kurt Swan.
But you know what I mean, right? Like, it's kind of the thicker, like, kind of beefier Superman.
Yeah.
Chesty. Not yet. He's more of a barrel-chested guy, not a yep. real muscly guy.
Yeah. Superman could be sucking in his gut a bit there. That's a possibility. He doesn't have the abs
yeah.
coming out like yeah. nobody's business.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. More abs than there are abs in our abs.
Well, that was the nice thing about the Lego Batman was where he went, he had an extra ab. It was like he had so many abs that he had the ninth ab.
Is that right?
Yeah. That was one of the first things off the top that he shows, you know, his abs. And he's got like, you know, whatever. Or is it a six pack?
A six pack.
He's got a seven pack.
Okay.
He's got the one extra one there because he's so cut.
He's so cut.
So cut.
Hmm. Cut. This means you're skinny, but that's fine.
Yeah. You can just see what's inside.
Yeah. Because you've taking like those water pills that are taking dehydrators or whatever to flush all the water out of your system. It's kind of a cheat, really. I'm not sold in that whole seventh ab. I think Superman could do better.
Fair enough.
Superman.
I think
you're a bad role model.
I think I would look forward to a Lego Wonder Woman movie because I think she's got enough weird stuff in her world with mm-hmm. gods and monsters and weird creatures.
Yeah.
That I think they do a nice job with that.
Mm.
Yeah. I don't know. I have no idea with the Lego, not Lego. I have no idea with the Wonder Woman movie really what goes on besides mm-hmm. it's in a war, the World War One.
Yeah.
But I'm like, will there be monsters? Will there be those elements?
Is that what it said? I thought it said for Wonder Woman 1.
So other people have said it because it is WW1.
Yeah.
So yeah, they can play that if they want. It's fun.
Have other people said that? I wasn't the only one to make that great joke.
No. People were saying that 2 years ago. But still, that's fantastic. Good for you.
I caught up.
You did. Welcome to the world.
Welcome to now.
That's almost been a character that I'm just shocked that people couldn't make work. Like she just.
Well, what do you mean it could make work? That she was in a popular 70s TV series.
There right? you go. And then 30 years later, she's in a movie.
Well,
there you
yeah.
go.
Boom. But I mean,
think about how many Batman. But could you say that about? How many okay. Superman yeah, projects
yeah,
have there
yeah,
been?
Yeah, yeah. No.
How many? You know. Gosh,
I mean, Batman's a different thing entirely. I mean, Batman is a long running successful concept. The people, you know, seems to work really well.
Right.
Because it's not.
There's
not
been
really,
like infinite Batman.
He's not
movies.
Really a superhero, is he?
He's Why, like, how is he not a superhero?
Well, I just mean he's not like he doesn't have extraordinary powers. Good detective. He's
a
very
good. Define for me what makes a superhero then.
Well, I mean in the sense that he has like magical abilities. He doesn't have magical abilities.
Yeah, like he's, a swing from a rope from building to building. Try doing that. Give it a shot. Can't do that. The stuff he does is so.
It's exaggerated, but it's not like Superman or Wonder Woman with a lasso that can make you talk or that she can fly or whatever. Or she mm-hmm. can block bullets with a pair of bracelets. You know, or Superman, who's just like impossibly powerful.
So you think a superhero has to have superpowers?
No, no, no. But what I mean is that the Batman as a superhero is an easier one to do. Because when you're
yeah.
back in the day when there was less, you know, special effects were harder. It was easy to do a Batman because you just had a guy running around driving a car. You didn't need to have, you know, a bunch of...
Well, let me ask you this. Did you find the Superman George Reeves series effective?
I've never seen it. Why would I watch it?
It's good.
Is it?
Yeah, it's happy. That's the nice thing is like when you see Clark Kent walk into a room, he's always smiling. He's just like, he's just having a great time, puts his hat up. Hey, guys, what's up? Oh, Clark, there's so much trouble. Really? What's going on? Well, this. Oh, well, I should get going. Puts the hat back on, gets out, storage locker out the window, and he's still smiling, having a good
yeah,
time.
Yeah.
And when people are shooting his chest, he's like, Oh, you. Thud. You know, dull palm thing to the forehead. Yeah. Deals with stuff. Yeah, that was the nice thing about Superman was he was having a good time being Superman, which I think they got right with that guy.
Yeah.
You've never seen a George Reeves Superman?
I've never seen it.
Oh, okay.
Unless, you know what? Maybe I shouldn't say that because when I went to see the MST3K Riff Tracks sort of, there wasn't really a reunion, the union of the two groups.
Yes.
I think they might have done a Superman serial, like a
That would be Kirk Allen then.
Oh, okay. So I haven't seen
that. Yeah. And Kirk Allen also was a big smiler. Okay. He was a guy who was enjoying himself as Superman.
Yeah.
And then he'd jump in the sky and turn into a cartoon and fly off, which was a nice effect.
Mm.
They did a little bit better with Captain Marvel. Captain Marvel version of that was much smoother, but it still was pretty neat.
Mm.
But like Wonder Woman, to me, you've got so many things there. You've got, she fights Nazis. Well, that's great. Yeah. She's a walking flag that fights Nazis.
Yeah.
Boom, there, that's fantastic. Oh, she's on an island with a bunch of women, and it's all sexy on the island.
When is this plan? When are you trying to get this going?
Give me a year.
Because it's not going to work in the 50s or 60s, right?
60s, it would. They'd be bikini women on an island. Absolutely, in the 60s.
I guess that would have sold, but I don't think the gods, like a lot of god stuff, would have gone over too well in that.
Okay,
time period.
I haven't gotten to the gods yet. I've gotten to punching Nazis in the face.
No, that's fine. In the 60s, I can see that stuff. Absolutely, but you're going to the island, and once you get to the island, you're starting to get to a different.
You got bikini ladies on the island, and then one of them goes, "I got to go fight some Nazis." I think a 60s audience would go, "You are speaking our language. You are speaking the 1960s language."
You posted. It's funny you bring this up because you posted on the Sneaky Dragon page.
How dare you?
Page.
How dare you? How dare you read our page for once and throw it in my face?
You posted
we had a deal. You'd never read that page.
You posted a little test reel of a Wonder Woman show, a kind of a Batman.
Yeah, it had
campy...
the same announcer as the Batman series.
And it was terrible.
It was something. It was something, all right.
It was terrible because here you have this opportunity to have, you know, I hate to say strong female or that kind of, blech, but you know what I mean? You had an opportunity to have like Wonder Woman doing a show and it would have been really kind of cool. And then it turns into like a total goof on the idea of like there even being a Wonder Woman.
How about Adam West Batman? Is that a goof and an insult to Batman and same thing?
No, I think...
What makes that one better than the Wonder Woman? By the way, I can tell you why the Wonder Woman wants shit.
Because the Wonder Woman, the Wonder Woman, it makes fun of her as Wonder Woman. Like, she's not a beautiful woman.
Well, why don't you tell people what it is? Why don't you break down what you're talking about?
Okay, well, you posted... Well, I can hardly remember. I watched it 2 days ago.
Why don't I break down
you
what
break
you're
it down.
About.
You break it down.
Okay, so it's a short. It's like about 10 minutes long.
You break it down, and I'll make funny interjections.
That'd be a nice change of pace. It's Wonder Woman, and it seems like her mom, but it doesn't make a lot of sense for it to be her mom. But her mom is...
But it is her mom.
But it doesn't make a lot of sense.
It doesn't make any sense at all.
Because it's a nagging kind of Jewish mom.
Yeah.
Who's just like... What are you doing here? Why are you here?
What are you doing?
You're a million years old. First of all, Wonder Woman's a million years old somehow. And she's like, I got to go out in the rain because Steve Trevor's plane might be crashing. You're going to have you get some meat on your bones. You got to finish your dinner. Finish your dinner. I don't have time, Ma. Nah, you got to finish your dinner. She's basically Rhoda. She's Rhoda. Okay, and then she goes, okay, well, I got to go become Wonder Woman. So she walks in a wall, and it spins around, and she comes out as Wonder Woman.
The worst costume, it doesn't make her attractive. It's like the opposite. It's the least helping you look good costume. Can't think of the word. I'm sorry.
That's right. I'm trying to think
of
you
the concept,
opposite
guys.
Of erotic. The opposite of alluring.
Opposite of attractive. The opposite of... It's just terrible. It's like she's wearing a bag for shorts.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, if she was wearing a potato sack, you'd go, that is a much better choice.
And like...
Go with the
maybe,
sack.
And maybe they didn't hire an actress with like an hourglass figure. I don't know.
But that was the gag it felt like.
Yeah, but it felt like they wanted her to be unattractive.
Well, let's get into... They do. So let's just get into the next bit. So she goes into the wall and comes out with the Wonder Woman outfit. And you go... Well, you go... All right. Because, like, frankly, you've seen Adam West. And he's got a bit of a paunch.
Yeah.
This is the way life is.
Yeah.
George Reeves wasn't like Johnny Abs.
Sure.
It's the way it is.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I mean, you had... But can I just interject and say that you had Julie Newmar as Catwoman.
Right, you got Barbara Eden. Yeah, I understand.
I mean, you had some sexy ladies.
There was
attractive women back then.
Right, but if the standard is Adam West with his gut,
yeah,
then
but,
fair enough. This works in this world. But then you're like, all right.
Wonder
then the next
Woman.
Bit is she's looking in the mirror at a very attractive Wonder Woman. And frankly, I'm like, I don't see too much difference.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not seeing it. But the announcer is like, she knows she's got the strength of Hercules. She knows she's got the speed of Mercury. She knows she's as smart as Athena. And she thinks she's as attractive as Aphrodite.
Yeah.
And then, for what seems like a goddamn eternity, she is flirting with her image in the mirror.
Just preening away.
And the whole bit is, she don't know she's ugly.
Yes, exactly.
What the fuck is that?
What kind of Wonder Woman
is
that?
What is that? And she's not. So it's like, is this 60s unattractive? Mm. Like, is this the worst you could get?
Yeah.
And then,
why they hire Ruth Buzzy?
So there you go. So she's doing flirting with the mirror image, which is another woman. So occasionally it doesn't match up, and that's kind of the gag. Then finally she goes, I gotta go save Steve Trevor. Goes outside the window, mothers, say hi to your uncle in Cleveland or whatever. He misses you for no reason. Means nothing. It's nighttime. Nothing there makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
Also, he's a million years old. Is he a god too? Are you a god? What's happening?
Yeah.
What are you saying? Yeah. And she's like, well, here I go. And so she starts to fly. And then there's some wacky leg movements.
Yeah.
Like it's like losing control and then gets pulled up. And that's the end of the story.
Ugh.
It was absolutely terrible.
Yeah.
But clearly they were trying to do the equivalent of Batman. Like, what's funny?
Okay.
A woman who thinks she's more attractive than she is. And so you would assume that she would land in front of Nazis or in front of thieves, and thieves would go, ooh. Like, that would be the gag. And what a horrible gag that would be.
But it's worse than Batman. I mean, Batman isn't making fun of him as Batman.
Oh, it is worse than Batman. It's miles worse than Batman.
Yeah, it's not making fun of him as Batman. I mean, this is making fun of the idea of a female superhero. So it's not a fun send up of comic books of comic book style. It's a send up of the idea of a female superhero, right? It's different than what Batman is. Batman is like comics are corny, comics are silly, they're for kids.
Yeah.
And let's make them kooky and campy and have some fun. A lot of bright colors, a lot of pows and kapows and silly music and a lot of jokes and stuff like that. But that's different than having a female superhero and is making fun of her as a human being who's a superhero. Like, it's just terrible.
Well, the problem is you're laughing at her.
Yeah.
Whereas Batman, even though he does silly things, you're still on
board
with Batman.
You're in on the joke. He's
still
in on the joke.
He's still the
protagonist.
Joke. Yeah. He's like still on board. You know, he's still the hero.
Yeah.
People take him seriously.
Yeah.
Even though he's a goof.
And he succeeds. And he wins in the end.
Yep.
You know,
and as a kid, you'd be watching this and going, "I don't get that it's funny. I just get that it's Batman." But
I did not like that show.
If you're a girl who's watching that Wonder Woman thing, what the hell? Also, they don't have her do anything. She don't have her lift anything or fight anyone, and it's bullshit. Yeah, I agree, it's crap. But what they should have done was the equivalent of like if you had Desi Lu Entertainment type thing, and you had your Star Wars sets, Star Trek. Apologies. Yeah, Desi Lu invented Star Wars. That's what I'm saying. Star Trek sets. Mm. You got some sexy outfits for ladies that could be on an island.
I'll say.
You've got your Nazi outfits.
Probably.
Just using the leftovers from Star Trek, boom, you got yourself an episode of Wonder Woman there.
But was it produced by Desi Lu?
Oh, which one? Star Trek?
Wonder Woman.
No.
Oh,
well,
okay.
Wonder Woman wasn't ever produced. Oh, you mean
I'm just saying, like, was Batman and that kind of
no,
stuff?
No, Batman, the Wonder Woman was produced by the same people that did Batman.
And was that Desi Lu?
No, they weren't.
So your strange argument has no...
My strange argument is I was trying to think what's a popular show in the 60s
that
would have had a similar look to it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, clearly in the 70s, we got your Linda Carter. That was fine. And then in the 80s, it would have been terrible because most things on TV were terrible in the 80s. 90s would have been dark and murdery and gritty and harsh.
Were they?
Yeah, I'd say so.
And her costume would have had nipples.
Possibly, yeah. There was a bit of shame to the superhero thing and in the knots.
Yeah.
Yeah, for a while there. But it's just amazing to me, like, you couldn't do any, like, I mean, geez, you look at how long Xena ran, you know, and if Xena can do, then you could have had a Wonder Woman show. Absolutely.
I guess.
Because that's basically the same deal. Fighting monsters once in a while and then other stuff.
But the great thing about Xena was they didn't have to pay anyone licensing fees. So the show could be done on the cheap. A Wonder Woman show would have that extra added budget baggage.
Well, I want to direct
licensing.
You to a couple of shows called Superboy. And I think there was a Supergirl show as well. Maybe there was, maybe there wasn't. But I know there was definitely two Superboy shows, and those could not have been done more on the fucking cheap. So it's possible to do a superhero show on the cheap.
Okay.
You know, DC would let you do that. Mm. There's some of that business. But yeah, you got monsters, you got gods, you got Nazis, you got a lasso that makes people tell the truth. Holy cow. What are you doing? Knock it off.
I enjoyed Wonder Woman in its day.
Yeah.
But I mean, if you think about Spider-Man existed as a cartoon series in the 60s. A
terrible live-action show.
And then they had the live-action show, which was not terrible.
He only could afford one web shooter because he was a very poor man.
Was not a terrible show. It was a great show. I watched it every week. And then,
Spider-Man?
Yeah. It was probably bad, but I like Spider-Man a lot, so I watched it.
All right.
Show.
I did too, and I watched them all, but
I've not seen it since I was a child, so they exist in my mind as a brilliant show. And then it was a long time before Sam Raimi, you know, the Sam Raimi helmed movie
because it's
vehicles.
Tricky. How are you going to make him climb a wall? Well,
that's what I mean, though. Like, I think that it takes a while. It's taken a while.
Also, Electric Company also had Spider-Man on it.
Mm-hmm, but that was animated, it was sort of animated because it had a lot of the stuff was done as or comic book drawings were sort of filmed as sort of inserts into the
inserts. Okay, fair enough. But he didn't drew do a web. There would be a gnat would appear.
Yeah, it was pretty lame.
His costume was better than the live action.
Quit making fun of the live action show.
What was with those eyes? creepy.
But this took a long time for technology to catch up. And that's why I think that Batman was a doable vehicle. Where something like Spider-Man, things that required more special effects were harder to do. You know, it would have been, you know, like a Spider-Man movie in the 90s would have looked no better than the TV series looked in a way. Like the technology wasn't really there yet to create acceptable superheroes. And I think that's why superhero movies now are doable and popular, because they're, you know, they're big action-packed movies that people don't mind paying money to go see in a theater. You know, like people nowadays don't want to spend a lot of money and go to a theater and it's a movie about a man and woman who are falling out of love with each other. Like, that's just, no one seems to want to do that anymore. Like, they're just not, you know, let's go see a movie about people that aren't happy. You know, let's go see Shoot the Moon. Like, no one's going to go see Shoot the Moon now in a movie theater. No one wants to see that. They'll be like, wait for Netflix.
Yeah, or they'll just put it directly on Netflix and it'd be fine.
That's fine too. But you know what I'm saying, right? Like, yeah. It's just like superhero movies now, just because they're easy to do. There's like the technology's there.
But even so, even the lower rung characters, you'll just put on Netflix directly anywhere. Mm-hmm. It's just
because it's easy to do.
Yeah, what's it do with still, Luke Cage? Do you think that'll be a good movie? Might be an okay movie. Yeah. Hey, why don't we just do 97 episodes in a TV series?
Maybe
at least five good ones. Yeah. Let's do it.
But you can do some low key special effects for those with
Loki's
computers.
Loki's not part of any of those.
You know what? Shut up. You know what I'm saying. I just think that, you know, Wonder Woman, was a good possibility, and I think that the 70s show, you know, it did okay. It was, you know, had Bionic Man level special effects, mm-hmm. and that's fine for TV. That's fine for kids.
Yeah.
In those days, that was fine for kids. That's what people said.
I don't think the comics ever really kind of got her, with the exception of maybe some stuff that Gail Simone did, maybe. You know, it's very rare that anyone kind of gets Wonder Woman and makes that character work.
Isn't it rare that people get Superman and make that character work?
It's happened a couple of times.
Yeah,
It's caught a little fire, yeah. Mm. Batman seems a bit easier to work, but they've made damn Green Lantern work, and that shouldn't work, not as a movie, but they've made Green Lantern work as a character. It's just, people seem to have such trouble with Wonder Woman, and to me, it's just so, you know, so many elements there that are fine. If you look at her original origin, one thing that's like just so weird is like her origin story for the Secret Identity kills me, which is like she shows up in the man's world.
Yes.
And she goes, she sees a woman and the woman's crying. It's like, why are you crying, sister? And then she looks up and like, oh, we look exactly alike. Yes, we do. And she's like, I don't know. I just don't like the way life's going, basically, and things aren't working out. And she's like, what if I take over your life for you? It's like, okay. And she basically gives her some money. So she's now Diana Prince.
I thought she just snapped her neck.
She got snapped. Takes her glasses.
Yeah.
Takes over her life. Mm. Okay. Well, she was working as like a secretary for the military, mm-hmm. and all this other stuff. And like, you've got no training. You don't know anybody. Did she give you the address?
Yeah, what's your typing
speed?
You're
able to just go and do this job?
Yeah.
What the hell are you talking about?
Ticket letter. Yeah.
Yeah, what's Superman's origin? Oh, he lands in Metropolis. He's a guy named Clark Kent. Goes, can I be you? Okay. Takes his glasses. Now he's a reporter. What the fuck is that?
But that would be... But
I mean, you really need a thing like, let's mind meld. Yeah. I know what you know. You know what I know. Here we go. Now
but,
you go. And
you know,
does Diana ever come back? No, they should, never. She just goes off to live her life.
They should establish that, like have the person ask her to take a letter and so you can just speed write so fast she doesn't need to do shorthand.
And then sets it on fire.
She's that fast.
I would assume she sets the paper on fire.
That seems inefficient.
Mercury.
She's as fast as...
Well, that's whenever they show...
As fast as Mercury flows?
They've done that a couple of times on the Superman show, where, like George Reeves, where you see him typing super fast.
Okay.
Like, well, that's not going to work with
No, because the keys get all jammed up.
Yeah. Can't do it, man.
It was designed... That's why the keys were put in that weird way.
Yeah.
They were the QWERTY yop layout was designed to slow us down.
Yeah, what Superman needs to do is to take all those keys out, dip them all in ink, and then just go stamp, 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 like,
you know,
a little
what? He had a special typewriter that was in that more efficient style. There's a more efficient one. I can't remember what it's called now at the top of my head, but there's a different layout of keys that's more, it helps, it's faster. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm saying.
I remember now,
you can program your computer typewriter to type in that.
I remember a Superman comic from the 50s where he was sitting in the Fortress of Solitude and he could actually speak, and the computer in front of him would write out what he said, and he was telling you doing his diary entry. I was like, that is amazing. I've got that in my phone. Mm-hmm. Not a big deal. I'd rather just type. It's not a big deal to me anymore.
You don't want to be Woody Allen laying on the couch telling us in like a Manhattan, dictating his story into that to me is a very, I couldn't write that way, I don't think.
But does he get someone else to type it up later? Does he?
Well, I'm sure he does, but I need to be like actively typing out the story, like thinking of the story as I...
He still types his movies on a typewriter.
He writes them on a legal pad, actually, on his bed.
Yeah, but then he types them on a typewriter and then cuts them out physically and does all this stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, whenever I hear of people doing that, I want to go, stop it!
No, I don't think that...
Yep. Stop being a weirdo.
Why?
Yeah, get with the times.
I don't think so.
Stop it.
No.
No, don't use that Gutenberg printing press.
You need your process, and if that's his process, he needs that. You know, like, you can't knock a guy who's been so... productive and at a pretty high quality
years. I agree with that. But also, come on.
Shut up.
We got great new things. Come,
you know what?
Come,
there are great new things that you don't do.
Like what?
I don't know.
Soccer?
Snapchat?
Snapchat.
I don't know if Snapchat's that great. Thing? I don't know if it's that great either.
Yeah, I don't think you're the person to be calling me on this one. Nope.
No, I'm not. I'm just saying that there's stuff that you and I...
Close the door to this glass house,
get
these rocks out,
and
I'll just start tossing.
Yeah, I am tossing them around in this glass house. And my point is that as I smash our glass house to pieces, is that neither of us are in a position to mock other people for not keeping up with technology. Because I'm sure there's lots of technology that we do not know how to use or use efficiently.
I'm sure David Lynch.
Photoshop.
I'm sure David Lynch Photoshop. Uses a quill. And a thing. Well, yeah, but I don't.
Photoshop.
I'm only getting
InDesign.
Back into. I'm only getting InDesign. Back into drawing now. So why would I be using Photoshop for writing? What use would I have for Photoshop?
Oh, well, writing, it's just useless. But
yeah,
you can't write in Photoshop.
So, but now I am going to try and do that with it's Manga Studio now has a different thing. It's like Clipping something.
Clipart. It's just another name.
It's another name. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So that's what I'm trying to learn. So I am trying to learn that. Mm-hmm. So back in your face. There we go.
Thank you for catching up. It's been around for a while.
I know, but I haven't been drawing, so there's no use for it.
Yeah.
You're not using the rotisserie stove. Yeah, but I haven't been cooking.
I don't cook. But you know what I'm saying? Like, there's lots of stuff out there that we do not take advantage of as well. It's just, you know, because we're comfortable with how we do stuff.
Right, but sometimes it's good to find out why the new thing is the new thing. Mm. You know, and maybe you'll move a little faster. Maybe things will be, you know. And if nothing else, it's good for waking up the brain. You don't want to constantly be doing things the same way, because that's not good for your noodle.
There's actually a lot of authors that do not like writing on computers. They prefer writing with a typewriter. They find that a computer doesn't help them write better. And it's probably a habit. But I don't think that you should discount habit as part of your process, you know? I think it's, you know, if part of your process is cutting out pages and pasting them and moving them around and pasting them down, then you need that, because it's a meditative part of your creative act.
Okay, I'm going to counter that with you might need that. But I think tradition is the enemy of art a lot of the times, because tradition leads to more repetition of what has previously been done. You know, whereas introducing a new element can wake your brain up in a different way and try different things. But people do things the way they do things because they've always done things. And I don't think that's necessarily the best thing for an artist to do, to just keep doing things the same way they've always done things.
No, I'll agree with you there. But I think that...
Well, then that's the end of the show.
That's
all we had time for.
I think that if... Like, I have no intention right now of not doing real life inking when I draw. Because I enjoy it too much. It actually, if I didn't do it, it would actually spoil drawing for me.
Okay.
Like, to me, that is like the ultimate part of the page is inking it. Like, I just love to ink. And if I couldn't ink, I just feel like, well, what's the point of even drawing? Like, we might as well. Like, I don't actually enjoy drawing in a computer that much. It doesn't have any. It's not appealing to me.
Sure.
But I agree with you that, you know, you do need to change things and, you know, and learn and mix it up and make, you know. And I do draw in Manga Studio, and I do draw or paint a little bit in Photoshop and stuff like that. Those are things that I have learned to do because it's easier for me. It's actually easier for me to do watercolors, fake watercolors in Photoshop than it is for me to learn how to do real watercolors in real life. I don't know how to do watercolors, but I can fake it.
You're in a learning stage of your artistic development right now by doing this amount of coloring at once.
And for sure.
When you're going to come out of it, you know, if you were like a Tamagotchi, you would have upgraded.
Yes.
You know, a couple of steps.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
When I come out of it with tunnel carpal syndrome.
Sure.
It'll all be good.
I mean, I see this with a lot of things, and I see this with performers. Again, we've talked about performers that do the same thing over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And I can see
you object there, but I think it's different between your means of communication and communication. I think there's a difference there. I think as an artist, you can change how you tell a story, the stories that you tell, you know, but you can still have a similar process to get to those stories. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that that's necessarily bad or that it makes you a stick in the mud.
I don't think it's a stick in the mud necessarily. That's not what I'm saying.
But you sort of implied that you need to change in order to like kickstart yourself into different ways creatively.
I think to do the new, it's very difficult to do the same thing repeatedly and get new results. I think you're leaving yourself.
But
like,
should everyone always be doing the new?
What's that?
Should everyone always be doing the new?
Are you doing art?
Yeah.
I mean, if you're doing Garfield, I guess you're fine. You know, if you're doing a comfort based thing that you want to like repeat the same thing over and over again, then have at it.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm talking about doing the new. I think like art is doing the new. You know, otherwise, if you're just repeating what you've done, we've already got that.
Yeah.
Do we need more of the thing that you just did? Like a second Mona Lisa? Like that's real. Like if you just kept doing the Mona Lisa over and over again, it's like, it's Mona
Lisa. But I think it would be a weird argument if you said that Luann, as drawn on a Cintiq, is a better comic strip than Charles Schulz, who drew in pen and ink till the day he died.
Well, let's talk about Luann for a second. Then you got Luann, and then you had the cartoonist, you know, doing Luann, and Luann was fine, and Luann was a successful strip.
Yeah.
And then the artist went, "I'm going to draw completely differently."
Yeah.
And did a major, major change.
Yeah.
And then consistently now has the characters changing and evolving, and you could just have, you know, oh, this guy's just still dating this woman. Mm-hmm. Oh, but wait, no, now they're married.
Yeah.
Okay, well now this is happening. Well, she could still be in high school. Nope, she's graduating. You know, there's a strip that's your favorite strip. But it delivers something new every time.
Yep.
Meanwhile, Blondie, two strips up, is Dagwood's doing the same job he always did, and nothing will change.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fine, and it's comforting, and it's there. But your favorite strip is Luann.
Yeah. And because of the soap opera element of it, for sure.
But there's other soap opera strips there, and those aren't your favorite strips. You're not liking Mary Worth. A lot of shit's going down in Mary Worth.
It's true. But it's not. There's no sense of
Apple Mary.
There's no sense of humor to it, though. And that Luann has a payoff every, you know, it may not be like a major payoff, it may not be like a gut buster every time, but, you know, it's, you know, there's something pleasing, though, to me about someone who can ring the changes on something that's really old.
Well, that's Schulz, though, too. I mean, look at, like, any era of Schulz's work. They were very, very different stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Schulz in the 70s is very different than Schulz in the 90s.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. He did explore different things.
I'm trying to think when he passed away. Was it in the 90s?
It was in the 90s.
Yeah.
Yeah. After he passed away, it was very different. His work changed dramatically. I just think it's and I brought it up before in the show, and maybe I've always made the mistake of bringing it up with people who work in older comics, but it does fascinate me that
I'm laughing at a Schulz joke. I just remembered.
Oh, what's this? What's the joke?
It was where Peppermint Patty was trying to learn. I think it was like Marcy maybe was trying to learn to swim.
Yeah.
So Peppermint Patty gave her a videotape on how to swim, and she brought the videotape out in the water with her, and it sank. It's just that silly little joke.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
it made
it's
me
a good one.
Yeah.
I just find it fascinating, like that, you know, like what the comic books I grew up with, the comic books I loved as a kid weren't superhero comics. They were Richie Rich comics and Archie. And I love those comics. And it just fascinates me that those comics that I think were actually really high quality for what they were, were written by a bunch of people who pretty much hated the comics that they worked on. You know, they were just hacks who were hired to come in and
where have you heard that? Where have you heard anyone who worked?
I wouldn't say that they hated, but you know what I mean. Like they didn't. It wasn't like their. It was probably wasn't their dream job to do Richie Rich when they, you know, the guys who like did Richie Rich in the 50s and 60s, Archie and stuff like that. You know, maybe Dan DiCarlo loved doing Archie. I have no idea. But I just feel like
probably liked doing Josie. Then went home and did Josie as well. Am I right?
Woo!
See, his wife is Josie, is what I'm saying. Anyway, it's a sexy joke.
But I feel like those people, it wasn't their life dream to do Richie Rich. But I think people who came later, people now who are doing Archie and are doing Richie Rich and stuff like that, that's her dream job. They were fans of these things when they were younger.
Okay.
And now this is their chance to like have some, I get to do Archie now. I'm really pleased this punch.
You know what? You could legitimately ask this question of like you can assume or we actually know someone who's working on that.
I know, but this is why I can't ask the question to the people that we know. It's because I think it's interesting that to me, the old Richie Rich and stuff like that is way better than what people are going to do now or what people are doing now. Maybe it's what they're doing now is a little different. I don't know. Okay. I have not read the new Harvey comics, for instance. But I have a hard time imagining that because those comics are weird. Like the old Richie Rich comics, you cannot question those comics. You cannot stop and say, wait a second. He's super rich, lives in a home the size of Texas,
right?
Has a property the size of the United States.
Right.
And he's friends with two kids who live in a shack.
Right.
Like, you cannot do that. You cannot stop the comic and think that. And you can't explain it. You cannot have, like, a moment. Like, if someone tried to explain why that works that way, it would ruin the comic.
Oh, it's too bad. I could. But go ahead.
but you don't need to.
Okay.
My point is that when you were a kid, when you read it as a kid, you didn't need that explanation. You just read it, and that's just what it was. His friends were Pee-wee and Freckles.
Yeah.
And they were friends.
That's right.
And you didn't think about it. You didn't go, wait a minute, what? I don't know anyone this rich because you just wouldn't know anyone that rich because they live in a different world than you.
Pee-wee and Freckles never complained about... Pee-wee and Freckles, even though they lived in a shack, did not ever have poor people problems.
No, they didn't.
They were never hungry. They never had issues. They were all happy. Yeah. It was fine. Mm-hmm. It was like, I'll give you this. The people who are poor and the people who are rich, they're equal status to each other. No one treats Richie better than Pee-wee and Freckles.
That's true. And I think also it's just a different attitude to self-sufficiency as well.
And then you see, is it Made of Money? I'm trying to remember.
There's Made of Money, Reggie.
And those guys are assholes.
Yeah.
And like, who would you rather be, Freckles or Made?
yeah.
I was like, well, Made's got all the shit, but you'd rather be Freckles. Freckles has a brother and they have fun. You'd rather be them.
Was I wrong to find Made really hot? I always thought she was really hot.
Hotter than Gloria?
Oh, yeah.
Hotter than Irona?
Irona? Redheaded. No, made hotter
of,
than Irona.
Made of metal. I think with Richie Rich, the angle is this simple, and people like go, oh, but how could you? I always think that it's just this simple. As a kid, did you want to be rich?
Mm-hmm.
Would that have been fun? Are you putting yourself into that character? Are you projecting yourself into that character? Then this is the fantasy.
Yeah, exactly.
Go to town.
Yeah.
Go to town. You're fine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, would you like to be able to turn invisible?
Yeah.
Yeah. Would you like to be able to fly? Yeah. Would you like to have magic witch powers? Yeah. Well, then enjoy Casper and Wendy. Then you're going to enjoy this.
Sure.
How about Lotta? What's her deal? She eats as much as she wants.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay. And she's strong.
Yeah, she is
strong. Are people mean to her? Once in a while, there's a bully. What happens? She beats the shit out of him. And everyone goes, yay.
Yeah.
Does that work for you, kid who's being bullied? It does. Mm-hmm. This story completely goes up my alley.
Yeah. And I think
all those characters work.
But I feel like, and I, you know, once again, I'm just projecting my worries onto things. But my concern about Richie Rich and those sort of things is modern tellings of those stories would make a continuity. It couldn't just be this sort of round and round sort of thing that the comics were in the old days, where you just didn't worry about, you know, no one stopped and said, hey, wait a second, didn't Richie blah blah blah, didn't that clock get broken in issue 236 of millions? You know, no one said that, right? It was just like everything resets or everything is just what it is, and no one could or should have ever drawn out like the map of the mansion. Like, we don't need to know what
there's infinite room.
It's just an infinite. It's like the TARDIS. It just has to be what it is. We don't need to explain what exactly is inside this big giant mansion. You know, that Richie sleeps in a vault in this issue. He does not sleep in, you know, his room is different in every story. Like, no one ever wrote a letter and said, wait a minute, In this issue, Richie was sleeping in a twin bed, but in this one, his bed was the size of his room.
I'm gonna bet for you that because we're talking about Dan Parent now, is redoing a lot of these characters.
I don't want to drag anyone into this.
That's all right, but he is doing it, yeah. And I'm sure it will not be consistent. Okay. You know, he gets it.
Just
he
have some fun.
But I'll tell you this: you get people like Giselle LaGlace and Dan Parent, and they worked on Archie,
mm-hmm.
but then they also work on their own stuff.
Yeah.
So you know that's their thing. They've mm-hmm. got like the Die Kitty Die that's thing, Dan, which is actually yeah. a parody of a lot of the Harvey stuff, ironically.
Okay.
You know, yeah, they got their own stuff that they do,
mm-hmm.
and mm-hmm. You know, so that's what they do. You know,
well, that's fine. That's fair. I don't mind. I mean, I'm just saying. I just find it fascinating that people who didn't really care, you know, their characters weren't dear to them.
I wonder. These are all things I'd like to see some interviews with people of.
I mean, they're gone. A lot of them are gone now.
And they wouldn't badmouth the work that they were doing.
No,
you got someone like an Ernie Chan who did a lot of work on Casper.
Yeah.
And then he went to work for Marvel and did a couple of characters that were very similar.
Okay.
But like that I believe he owned.
Capsar.
What is Capsar? No, there's Planet Terry. I remember that was one of the characters okay. that they did for Marvel Star Lines.
I remember
Star Lines. And there was another one as well, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that was his style as well. He learned to draw a lot like Warren Kremer, who is the guy who designed the classic look of Richie Rich and Casper with the big mm-hmm. head and the big eyes and stuff like that. He was the sort of the style guru of those. And that was his thing, but I think, and maybe that was what he loved to draw. I don't know. It would be interesting to read interviews with him or to try and interview people who worked on those books and feel like, or did you feel like you were slumming? Where did you want to move on into advertising? Is this your dream job, was to draw comics for kids? You know, draw like, you know, infinite did variations.
People, I don't even know. And this is a weird thing, but like it feels like then, and I'm just projecting right now, that do you have a job? Yeah, it's fine. You went to the office. You did your job. You did your comic. You came home.
That's it.
You had your martini. That's it. Yeah.
Yeah. And in a way.
What's your dream? No, what do you mean dream?
Yeah.
I'm going to work. Mm-hmm. My dream? Mm-hmm. What are you talking about, brother?
Exactly. But that's what I mean. In a way, that's kind of a hack because it's just your job. You're just doing your job. And that's fine. I'm not going to.
I don't
put
think
that down.
Hack is any more than someone going to an office and just doing their thing. You know, is that hack?
Yeah, I mean, you're not putting your. It's not your artistic life, right? You're just drawing for a dollar. You're not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so that's.
Hack seems to have negative connotations, whereas I think something like doing the same type of Richie Rich story over and over, you're yeah. doing what they want. You're doing what the kids want. Yeah. Everyone's yeah. getting what they want
sure.
out of it.
Sure. Just ringing the changes. Just ringing those changes. That's yeah. fine. I mean, there's
infinite Richie Rich books
and
out there.
I admire it, but I just can't imagine that those guys, those cigar smoking guys,
mm-hmm.
going to their office, drinking their booze at lunch, coming yeah. back after their three martini lunch back to the office to draw some more Richie Rich. I can't imagine it was a dream job. I feel like it was a job that they made money doing that job, but if they'd had an opportunity to draw advertising, you know, work in advertising, they would have easily. Quickly moved on without
maybe.
And never said, you know what, I'm going to keep on drawing Richie Rich. I've hit my groove, and this is where I want to stay all my life.
Hmm.
Because they didn't grow up with Richie Rich. You know, they created Richie Rich, and they created Richie Rich, or they improved on Richie Rich, you know, as part of their job. And they did a really good job at it. But I doubt that it was, you know, their dream. Job.
And we can't know.
But we'll never know.
Unless some of them might be alive still. We could ask them.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe some are still hanging around. I don't know.
But most of them are dead.
I would imagine so.
Could it be the Casper curse?
Yes.
Dave, I wrote a Casper movie. Am I cursed as well?
You have the curse of aging. Yes, you are also cursed.
Okay.
Sorry to tell you. We are all equally cursed.
I was just happy in the movie I did that I was able to bring up that Casper and Spooky looked alike. That really wasn't mm-hmm. touched on too much. Well, you guys are the same look.
They're the same.
There you go.
They're all the same.
Well, no, I mean, Rich, the ghostly trio don't
Richie
look
Richie
like.
Rich and Casper look the same. If you just
yeah.
add some hair to Casper and yeah. put a little suit, is this the same head shape and everything else?
Yeah,
this
very similar to Hot Stuff.
Yeah, yeah, and Hot Stuff is the same. They're all the same design. They're just variations on that design. Once again, just ringing the changes.
Yeah, I'm still, they've tried to bring Hot Stuff back and they don't know how to do it. Because he's a devil. So what is he?
Mm.
He's an imp that lives in the woods and sets shit on
fire. He's not a devil. He's an imp. Yeah.
Yeah, he's an imp that lives in the woods. But Casper is an imp as well that lives in mm-hmm. the in the woods. Yeah. So what's the deal?
But once again,
what's the deal?
You don't question it. You don't question why Casper is alive, or why he's dead and now he's a ghost.
But here's the other,
and why he looks the way he does.
It's not the questioning. It's with Hot Stuff. It's just you got a character whose main thing is setting shit on fire, which is not the best thing for
kids. Is that his thing?
Yeah, he gets angry and sets shit on fire.
I don't really remember.
It burns you. And he's got an asbestos diaper.
It feels like to me that most of the Hot Stuff you read when you were growing up was just Twinkie ads.
No, I liked Hot Stuff.
Okay,
he was a fun character because he would set shit on fire, and I like fire.
Yeah.
So sure, it was fine.
Yeah,
and he had like the grandpa or the uncle, who was the old guy, who would just swear. So it'd just be long streams of cartoon swear words.
Okay,
and I love the crazy cartoon swear words, and so everyone would just be like grimacing while he would go by him and just be like, and just the idea that like there's a character in this world that just swears. The filthiest swears in the world, and then just that's
was
his
there,
gag.
Was there a girl character in there, like the kind of Wendy character, to offset his character, or to?
I can't see how there wouldn't be. Yeah. There must have been.
Yeah,
Wendy was cool. Wendy was the coolest of them all.
Why?
She just was cool.
Why?
Didn't take no shit. Like Casper wanted.
Even
desperately...
Gloria.
Huh?
Either Gloria.
Nah, Gloria. Okay, here's the thing with Gloria. Like you had Casper.
Gloria was Richie Rich's girlfriend. Non-believers.
Yeah, friends. So you had Casper, and Casper's thing was, I really want to be your friend. He's a little needy, right?
Yeah,
desperate.
Yeah, yeah.
Scared people ran, scared.
Ghost.
Yeah, Richie Rich, for some reason they had that stupid, the poor little rich boy thing.
Like that came from the early days.
Yeah, sure, fair enough. But like,
it came from the idea that I have a book of Richie Rich stuff, and in it, there's an original, the first appearance by him is a story where his mom wants him to practice playing the violin.
Ah.
And he's looking outside, and the kids are outside playing in the sandlot, playing some fun baseball. And he can't because he's rich. So he can't be outside doing that. He has to be inside doing snooty things. Mm-hmm. And so he puts on a record or whatever, or makes something to make his violin play. And he goes outside, and I think he was supposed to practice dancing. And he puts on like silhouette kind of things on a record.
Oh,
so they're spinning around.
Okay.
Yeah. And then he goes out and plays with his friends. And that's why he's poor little rich boy, because his wealth doesn't bring him happiness.
Yeah.
It brings him being trapped in his house doing a lot of snooty stuff to
please his
mom. And
then they ditch that because who gives a fuck?
Yeah.
Gloria.
Yeah. They made the character better.
You think, but Gloria's deal is, you know, she's always reacting to stuff that Richie does. Richie tries to buy her a boat.
Yeah.
And she's like, don't give me this boat.
Yeah, yeah.
She's annoyed. So he's not listening to what she really wants.
He's not listening to her needs.
And she's annoyed.
What a bad boyfriend.
Yeah, she's the flip of what a lot of these characters are, of like, where's my flowers? He brings her flowers. Don't give me flowers. I don't want flowers.
Well, she doesn't mind flowers, but he'll buy the whole flower shop.
That's right.
You know, or he'll bring like a truckload of flowers.
She's usually annoyed.
And her dad has hay fever.
Richie is doing.
Yeah.
And Richie has a weird relationship with her because he doesn't listen to what she's saying.
Yeah.
Wendy don't give no fucks. Wendy is just going and doing her stuff.
Yeah.
You know? Wendy isn't like, I'm your girlfriend, Casper. They used to be, once upon a time. Then they ditched that.
Because
who gives a shit?
Yeah, yeah.
They're friends. She just hangs out. And she's got superpowers. She's more powerful than anybody. She's got the old witch aunts, but you know, who are going, you should be evil. She's like, no, fuck you. I'm gonna do what I want. I'm gonna play it Wendy's way.
Yeah.
And she's the coolest.
Yeah.
She goes about her business, a great time, enjoys what she's doing, doesn't feel guilty about things.
She's the good witch.
Damn right she's a good witch. She's the best character by far. She's not obsessed with dots. She doesn't
obsessed with dots,
she doesn't eat her feelings. She's great. But if she wants to make a cake and eat it, she'll fucking do it. She's Wendy. Most powerful witch in all this. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised, quite frankly, if she's the reason for all these things in the woods. I think she would go like, I think it would be cool to have a ghost around here.
Yeah, yeah.
Boom, Casper exists.
Huh.
Hey, how about a little devil?
You're making your sound worse.
Boom. And then she makes everything in the woods exist.
You're making your sound worse by saying that.
Yeah. Nightmare the horse. Boom, exists.
I don't remember that.
Nightmare was Casper's horse.
Oh, okay.
Wait, no. Was Nightmare Wendy's horse? Nightmare was a ghost horse.
Okay.
And Nightmare got so as a person who is a horse person, you should know this.
I'm not a horse person.
You work with horses? Do you have a horse?
We have a horse. Well, I mean, our family has a horse.
Your family's... Then you're a horse person.
Okay.
Family has a horse. Am I a horse person? but Nightmare was Casper, I believe's a horse. And he was so popular that he had his own comic book.
Nightmare had his own comic
book. Yeah, of horse adventures. Ghost horse adventures.
Ghost.
I am very surprised you don't know about Nightmare.
I don't. I was pretty much a, I was selectively, I was only a Richie Rich reader.
Okay.
I was not that interested in Casper and all that stuff. I wasn't that impressed.
You liked it being
Casper.
Grounded in reality.
I like the reality of Richie Rich, yes. The absolute reality of having a robot maid and a butler who could do practically anything.
What was the butler's name?
Cadbury.
There we go.
What was the chauffeur's name?
Cadbury 2.
Bascom. Come on, man.
Bascom, you're right.
I can't remember the name of the chef, though. Chef Pierre? I'm going to say that was his name.
That sounds right. Now I'm looking up Nightmare of the Horse.
Why? You've described him perfectly. I have a picture in my mind of this horse dripping with blood, like this, like tattered flesh, dripping strips of tattered flesh dripping off it. This is like a nightmare looking thing, like horrific. Its eyeballs are like,
out see, of, look,
oh, it's so cute. It has like a dream like a cloud.
Yeah, and
for
Casper's throwing horseshoes through him that land on his feet.
He doesn't even need horseshoes.
See, if you were a farrier in this world, what a lovely job that would be.
What an easy job that would be.
Could not be easier.
They all look like leaners.
What are leaners?
The horseshoes.
Okay,
like they're ringers, right? Are they ringers? I should say maybe.
Okay, listen, you can't.
Are they ringers or are they leaners?
Well, you can look, dude. I don't know what you're talking about.
Like when you play horseshoes.
Oh, okay. There, take a look.
Take a look at this picture. Sorry, everyone. Terrible.
I thought you were doing.
Yeah, technical. Ringers. They're all ringers, which is doesn't really make sense because why would they be not going through a ghost?
I don't know. Maybe his legs weren't dead yet.
They're just asleep.
Yeah,
he thought they were dead. They're just pins and needles.
The version of Casper that I did in the movie was a child that was dead.
Yeah, you made that clear.
It wasn't me that made it clear. It was the first movie because this was the fourth movie in the series.
Really?
And so yeah, it was in the Casper movie with what's her name from the Addams Family? You know, little girl. Christina Ricci.
Okay.
I believe Christina Ricci was in it. Yeah, he was a boy that passed away of an illness.
Yeah.
And became a ghost.
Tuberculosis?
You know, whatever's funniest. Whooping cough. That sounds pretty funny.
That's pretty good. Yeah.
Boo! Hey there, Casper.
You die now sounding like Edwin. Charge.
Yeah. And then a really weird origin story in the second film, which is train to the nether realm. Well, it's just awful. It makes it sound like the afterlife is terrible, quite frankly. And, you know, it's good that he got out.
We don't know.
Well, according to the movies, we do.
Yeah. So according to that movie, it's terrible.
Yeah, it's absolutely terrible. It's good that he moved in with those uncles.
I don't.
Who aren't really his uncles?
No. The ghostly trio aren't his uncles?
No.
What are they?
They look at him like a you know, they let him call them uncle.
Okay.
As you would at that time. It was like, I'm a guy raising a kid. What should he call me? She can't call me, you know, Doug.
Yeah.
He's got to call me uncle. So there you go. I guess he's going to call me Fatso. I guess that's what he's going to call me because that's what he calls him. Oh boy. Fatso, Stretcho, and Stinko.
Once again, not a Casper guy.
Okay.
Not on the Casper train. Not on the hellbound Casper train.
What was Reggie's last name? Do you remember that? I don't remember that.
Reggie something bucks.
Reggie Lottabucks?
No. Reggie...
Megabucks?
No. I can't remember. Sorry.
Okay.
But it was Reggie... Yeah, I can't remember. Damn. Yes, that bratty cousin Reggie. Good character, though. Mm-hmm. Good character.
It was weird to me that you had Reggie being the bad guy, you know, but it was also a friend in that. And you also had Reggie being the bad guy who was also a friend in Archie. Reggie seemed to be the name.
Yeah, of a stuck-up, snobby sort of person we called Reggie. Or Reginald.
Yeah, Reggie and Archie did have a couple of bucks on him. Mm-hmm. Like, he would have the fancier car.
Yeah.
It wasn't Veronica Large was another Harvey character who teamed up with Little Lotta every so often, had rivalries in the eating contest. But Veronica Lodge, yeah, was the rich one.
Well, because it would make sense for... Because you need both Archie and Reggie striving for that, for those dollars. So it would make sense if Reggie already had a bunch of bucks. But yes, he's better off than he dresses better than Archie does.
And in modern comics, Jughead used to be rich, and that's how he became bitter. Was because his family lost their money, and then everyone
don't like it, don't eat it.
Okay, and then everyone lost. I'll finish my story then.
Sure.
He lost his money, and everyone stopped being friends with him except for Archie, which is why I knew Archie was a true friend.
Yeah.
And he used to be. He used to be heavier, big, heavy guy, and then went through whatever you go through and then got really skinny, but still has that appetite. Sorry, you don't like that. That's the way it is.
I don't like it. I don't like
you know
that
what,
sort of
though?
You don't need
you've,
that stuff.
You've got, you know, 60 years of Archie comics.
I do. I can just read those and enjoy them and say, they knew how to do it in those days, folks.
Okay. So if you
no were... need for continuity, though, in those days.
Let's do this.
Don't have to explain anyone's backstories constantly.
Someone comes up to you and goes, hey, Dave.
Yeah.
Here's a bag of money. You'll put it on here. We're going to give you this bag of money.
Yeah.
If you write us a one-issue long Richie Rich story.
Yeah.
And you get this bag of money. What's the story about?
What's the story about?
What's a good Richie Rich story? What makes for a good Richie Rich story?
A good Richie Rich story is a story where Richie foils robbers who are trying to rob the house in some way, or rob the property in some way.
Okay.
So I don't think, personally, I do not like the super long Richie Rich stories.
Oh, you want a short story?
It has to be like a series of short stories.
Oh, is it a series? Because occasionally they do that. A series of short stories tied together, general theme, but it would each buckle down.
Yeah, I guess you could do that, but I would rather have like just a
just want a short
series
story.
Of stories. Yeah, a series of stories. I mean, I guess you could tie it together with, okay, so robbers are going to rob the mansion.
Okay, I'm a robber. I'm robbing the mansion.
And they,
I'm going for the vault.
But the surprise, but what I like best is when the robbers try and break into the mansion, and then they're surprised about how much money's there. And they don't know what to do. So the robbers are like, they didn't bring enough bags, or they don't have a big enough car to carry everything that they could take. And so Richie helps them. You know, he brings the car around for them. To help them with like getting more stuff into their car, and they don't realize that he's like tricking them, and he's going to you know, foil them at the end of the story, because they think that, oh, this kid's dumb. Maybe they come there in disguise. They're money cleaners. They've come to clean money.
Very good. Okay.
And so they're gonna take
good,
this money.
Yeah, we're gonna clean out your vault.
We're gonna clean out your vault, and nice. We're gonna clean the money, and we'll bring
like
it back.
It.
We'll bring it back. And so, but the vehicle they bring isn't big enough. They didn't realize how much money there actually is in the rich family vault. So Richie's there. In fact, it's not even money in the vault. It's money like out in like a hill.
Okay.
You know, it's like a big giant vault in a mountain, and so they're trying to clean that.
Maybe the mountain is actually just money that's covered up. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's Mount Rich.
That's right. And so...
Oh, that sounds like a cover where it'd be a volcano that was sprouting out money.
Mm-hmm. Or like part of the... They've had an avalanche, and it reveals like the whole side of the mountain's gold.
Yep.
That'd be good too.
That's the way it goes.
And so then... But okay, so if we're going to do a longer one, though, we need a B plot. So our B plot's going to be with Gloria.
Okay.
Or it could be with Pee-wee and Freckles. If it was Pee-wee and Freckles, what would you do? You'd have to have Richie trying to help them, but they don't really need help. So
have they got chores?
Oh, that'd be good. So Richie lends them Irona to do chores around.
There you go.
To do chores around their
now
shack.
We're talking. Thinks he's helping, but
it really doesn't work out, because she just causes a lot of damage, because she's not used to working with the kind of rickety stuff that they have in the shack.
Small space.
Our C plot. We're going to have Gloria. We got to get Gloria in here.
Okay.
Our C plot is that Richie is, he thinks that their anniversary is coming up, but he's wrong. Mm. Or maybe he thinks that it's her birthday.
Yeah, I go birthday over anniversary.
Yeah, birthday.
How long have they known each other?
Yeah, yeah. I would go over, let's do birthday instead. And so he's trying to plan some big giant thing, but he's being really obvious about it. And so maybe he's like building something next door to her, but he's trying to be like on the down low about it, but she... You know, it's obvious what's happening, and she's really mad. Mm-hmm. And I think if you could kind of juggle those three stories through it, I don't know. I have to like.
Here's where I'm going
to
go.
Here's
with
the
this.
Thing. I have to write it down. I'm not really good at brainstorming. I need to write out
a
story.
I'm going to pitch this. He wants to make her a big cake, right? So make a big cake.
So he's building a bakery next door.
All right, we got a bakery.
He can't transport that big a cake.
Right, but here's the other thing that you need for this big cake.
Yeah.
Big eggs. So he needs. So he's brought these birds that are like the equivalent of ostriches, but bigger.
Okay.
And they get loose.
Okay.
And they're running amok.
Yeah, yeah.
And laying eggs everywhere. Yeah. And he's trying to gather the eggs while also trying to ride the ostriches back in.
Okay.
And she's all like, what's going on? And it's just like, well, you heard of cowboys? Yeah. I'm an emu boy.
That's good. I like
that
it.
That kind of thing.
That's good. I like
and
it.
And she likes mm-hmm. and as wild as they are with him,
yeah.
with her, they love her. Mm-hmm. So they're immediately like all up to her, and they can sense goodness in her.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's good. I really like it.
And I think like Richie by the end gets too involved in trying to make this cake perfect.
Yeah.
And accidentally gets put into the cake, but not baked into the cake. Falls into the cake, so that when the cake's presented, she's like, "Where the heck is Richie? What's going on?" And he falls out of the cake, and he's just a big mess.
Or another idea would be the cake is so big that it's just like bulging out of this bakery that he's built specifically to make this cake, and it's just like. It just doesn't work because he can't get it out of the... It's like someone building a boat inside a house.
Yeah. Or maybe he puts too much yeast in it. Mm. And so the entire thing does expand and explode.
Uh-huh.
But I really like Irona with helping Pee-wee and Freckles with the chores.
Yeah.
And them having to teach her the right way of...
Oh, that's a good idea. Yeah, yeah. That's good. I like that. Mm-hmm. Like she's never used a washboard before or something like that. You know what I mean? Like this kind of corny
stuff. Here's
where
I'd go with that story too. I'd go with... She's like, I'm too strong for the things you've got here.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, I've got an idea. So she goes to the woods and she builds a wooden version of her.
Okay.
You know, that that they're going to use. But then we get into a thing where, like, it doesn't have any mechanics.
Yeah.
You've got to control it. So they're doing the same chores they'd be doing,
yeah,
but just with this wooden thing.
Hmm. That could work too. I think Richie Rich, there's lots of variations. I was thinking that it would be fun with those cleaner guys if he maybe he actually lets them use their car, but he just keeps giving them more and more stuff, and they're so greedy they just keep taking it, and it just causes their car to collapse, and that's the end of their plot to steal from
the riches. Can never drive it. They can't drive it off. Yeah.
I mean, there's lots of variations. It's to me, it's a fun character. I mean, you can do so many variations of one of my favorite. I'd say
by the time you then cut to them later in prison, and the job they've been giving is cleaning.
Yeah.
As well. So, you know, hey, boss, we're really doing this job. Yeah. I always wanted to. Because maybe there's the one dumb guy who's like, so how we clean the money, boss? This sounds fun. We're not really cleaning the money, you numbskull. But he really likes the idea of being a cleaner. So when he's in jail later and he's cleaning, he's just like, this is great, huh, boss?
Yeah,
we're actually doing it.
Yeah.
He's happy.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be good.
You want the one dumb.
Yeah, you need to have a sort of Abbott Costello element to your thieves. Yeah,
that makes a little happy ending for everybody. Everything's fine. But okay, continue with your thing.
Oh, I was just gonna say there's a Cadbury story I love so much, which is Richie Rich trying to one up Cadbury by making him play sports. So he's like, Cadbury's such a stiff, you know, starch collar.
Monster Rich,
yes. And so he wants him to play football and stuff like that. And this is one of the things where Cadbury throws the football so hard that it's going towards the window of the Rich mansion.
Uh-oh.
So he outruns the football, runs upstairs. The Mrs. Rich is in the room.
Sure she is.
And, you know, so it's time, you know, he runs in, just here to serve tea, madam, opens the window. The football comes in the window, it flies into his arm, and then it also helps cool the tea. So he's like, tea is perfectly cold. Your tea, madam. And it's just so wonderful. It's really well timed. It's a good story. It's one of my favorites. A little favorite there for everyone.
What accent do you think the Cadbury has?
British, yeah, for sure.
Think he's British?
Oh, yeah, he's a British fellow.
He's not like upper class American?
No. We wouldn't have like a Boston accent or anything like that.
How about Bascom?
Like a Bascom, it would be, I think Bascom is more of a, I don't think he's French. I think he's like kind of an American.
Because I'm betting the chef is French.
Yeah, Chef Pierre is French for sure. Because he says like zut alors and stuff like that. He uses a lot of the thing. But Bascom, I think, is just an American guy who happens to be called Bascom. But there's no specific, it's a classy name because he's working a classy job. But if you listen to him, he'd be like kind of a Jersey guy, you know? Because he's an expert at cars, so he's a little joysy.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
Puts on a little bit of a thing, maybe. This is one of my favorite things to do. I like, getting a character and just going like, what plot would you make up for this character that you would probably never write?
Okay.
And just go, and you go to town like that. I was asked this week to pitch a couple of Star Wars-y things, and I was like, I never even thought of like writing anything like that.
So it's Star Wars stuff?
Yeah,
okay.
I think with some Star Wars characters.
Okay.
So sent out 4 pitches today. But it was interesting because like I never thought of plots for Star Wars characters, so it just put the brain in an interesting place.
Interesting. So I can't
tell you what the plots are because I put them out there already.
Without giving too much away, though, are they new characters or old characters?
No, there's one that was a Han Solo and Chewbacca story. One was a Princess Leia when she's a little younger.
Okay.
One was a Yoda on Dagobah, and one involved some Jawas on Tatooine.
I think Yoda would be my favorite character to write.
Oh, interesting. What makes him your favorite character?
I just think it'd be fun to write stories about a very wise, very powerful man who's also a klutz.
Well, the thing is, you got to like put him up against something.
That's right.
So what do you put him up against? Like where do you do him? Like, because he's, you know, is he on Dagobah?
But I think prefer to think of him as by himself there.
Because I'm saying the only stories that exist are the Dagobah ones. So. Yeah. Does someone else drop by on Dagobah?
No.
It's just him on Dagobah.
I'd rather the stories just be him, like kind of like almost like sort of survival stories. Like just, he needs food or he needs to build a woodshed or he needs stuff like that, right? Like, so it's the stories where maybe he could use his powers, but he just tries to do it himself and it's not so good, you know? And so then he has to like, but then there's an element of wisdom to him as well. Where
now,
it's
is he talking to himself
this
whole time?
He talks to himself.
Okay.
You could maybe give him like a companion, like an animal or something like that.
Yeah, who do you do?
If you're going to do a companion animal, it has to be a swamp creature, so it could be like a lizard.
We've seen that there's something that's in the swamp, that one after R2-D2.
So and I think it can't be that big that it's spitting out, that's big enough to spit out a droid. Like that, okay. That seems like too big a monster. Like it has to be a small thing. Like I would either do like a like kind of a cute animal, maybe like a raccoon would be good, because that's pretty mischievous and would have some fun, or like a lizard sort of thing.
Okay.
And then, but it doesn't talk. It can't talk.
So, but Yoda's talking to him.
Yoda talks to it. Yeah, yeah. Nice. It's kind of their. I think that would be good. I like Yoda. I think he's a fun character. I like the idea of a wise person, but who's not perfect. You know.
Now is Yoda lonely on Dagobah?
Yeah. Or the only problem he has is seagulls.
Ah, we all get that. All right. We're about the hour.
Did you ask if he's a lonely person?
Yeah.
I don't think so. I think he's a person who can live in his head really well. So you know he. He has a lifetime of things to think about.
And yeah, I'm not sure how Yoda feels about things, because has Yoda kind of given up on things and it's just like basically winding down? Or is Yoda waiting for kind of the equivalent of a Luke Skywalker to show up? Like when Luke shows up, does Yoda go, it is time?
Yeah.
Or does Yoda go, what the fuck? I didn't expect this at all. You know, okay, I guess.
Yeah.
I guess old Yoda's got to take care of some business when Yoda thought it was all done.
Sure. He's hiding his porn stash.
Because Yoda is just about ready to die, right? Like Yoda's in the last the end of his life. So, what's Yoda like on Dagobah? Mm-hmm. Is he enjoying it or is he full of regret?
So if you're going to do Dagobah stories, you don't want to do them like later stories. Maybe you do them earlier stories.
When he first arrives
and he's trying to establish himself there and stuff like that.
There's tons of animals and it's a beautiful planet. It's all foresty.
Yeah.
And he makes it shit by the time that Luke shows up.
He just wrecks everything.
Yeah, he doesn't believe in global warming. He just fucks it all up.
No, I don't think
kills every animal.
I don't think that would be.
I love the taste of every one of them.
That doesn't sound too good. I thought a great character. I don't think you'd have too much.
Then you find out the rest of Dagobah is fantastic. You've just found the one swampy, terrible place.
He's like the early Inuit, you know, people who just like refuse to believe there was something better than where they were.
Hmm. Well, both
everyone else is like, I'm heading south. Like, why? Well, because it's so cold here. They're like, it's not that bad.
Yeah, both Yoda and Obi-Wan both decided, fuck it, let's be hermits. Let's just be hermits.
Once again,
you don't think they both hermited up?
Well, I think. You know,
and wait it out until something happens.
I feel like the Jedi and those elements of the story really suffer from our insane desire for continuity.
Okay, fuck continuity. Starting with Star Wars, first time you see you hear about Obi-Wan, he's the crazy hermit that lives on Tatooine. Mm-hmm. So he's a hermit. And then when you first see Yoda, he's a guy who lives by himself on a planet. So these are your two wise Jedis.
Yeah.
And both of them come from hermit backgrounds. They're the monks that live by themselves.
Well, they're like monks. Yeah, they're like monks. And maybe part of the discipline of Jedi is a certain amount of meditation and being away from the noise and bustle of whatever life. It's not modern life because it took place a long time ago. But at that time, that life. You know, and maybe that was necessary for them as masters was to, you know, part of the stories that Star Wars drew from was the idea of masters that lived away from civilization. That you had to go to them.
Yep.
You had to make the trek to them, and part of your journey to become who you were was that travel to them and your teachings with that person. And so I think, you know, part of that story are those people. And when we listen to those stories, we don't suddenly go to, well, why are they there? Why is this old Chinese guy locked up on a mountain? Like, why is he just hanging there? Like, why is he waiting for Beatrice Kiddo to show up so he can train her? Like, why is he there? Like, why isn't he in the nice? Why doesn't he live in an apartment in Hong Kong and have some money? Because he's a talented guy. He could probably make a good deal of money on the market. And have a couple, you know, just do some jobs on the side, you know, invest his money wisely. He could be living well. Why is he living in a broken down temple on a mountain? What a jerk. But you just don't think of it that way, because part of the story is that you have to go, as the hero or the heroine of the story has to remove themselves from that story, or from their lives, and travel to this person and learn in uncomfortable ways and stuff like that.
And you don't have to fill in every hole.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing. I mean, again, we were talking last week about Twin Peaks. I think one of the benefits of Twin Peaks, or the things that works to Twin Peaks' favor, is not everything's answered. So you still enjoy it, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas if say, at the end of this 18-episode thing, they go like, and that's every mystery solved.
Yeah.
Like, you'd be like,
well, you know they're not going to, but
yeah, that's the David Lynch. You know, they're going to keep like enough open that you're going to be like, whereas like Star Wars has been around for so long that they've plugged every hole and just like, well, what did Yoda do in the minute between this? That's like,
exactly. Because we don't need to know that. It's not important to the story. It's not a part of a hero's journey, which is what Star Wars was supposed to be. Like, it's supposed to borrow from Joseph Campbell, from The Hero of a Thousand Faces, whatever that book is called, where it takes, you know, Lucas, who, although he says he didn't never knew the book, he knew the book. And he took elements of the story. Yeah. Or even if he didn't, he took elements of films that he liked that borrowed from our cultural retelling of the story in so many different ways. There's so many retellings of this story.
Oh, completely. I think that's what I really
maybe
do
I think of Hugo, A Man of a Thousand Faces. Sure, that's what George Lucas drew from.
Absolutely. What I think probably happened was he did borrow from movies that that knew of
Hidden Fortress and stories like that.
So you're four times removed, but then you go like, no, seriously. So as you see, he did the hero's journey of the. When you know that in the second movie. They had not planned to make Darth Vader Luke's father. That was not a thing in the first movie.
No, that's right. You're right.
So he's doing make-em-ups as it goes along. And then when you get to the very end, you go like, what a, oh my gosh. Everything was tight as a drum. It's just like, retroactively.
It's tight as a drum. And also, that's one of the magical things about writing, and I'm sure you've experienced it too, where you introduce something like offhandedly at the beginning of a story. You just throw it in because you need something there. You're like, he should be holding something.
Yeah.
So he's holding a screwdriver or whatever. And then 200 pages later, you're like, oh, the screwdriver.
Yeah.
Oh, that works perfectly.
I just had that recently where
you didn't mean it, right?
Yeah, I was writing a story.
Yeah.
And for this comic that I'm doing. Mm. And I got to a part where I was like, balls. How do they? You know, it's basically like they got to find the villain.
Yeah.
Well, how the hell do they know where the villain is?
Yeah.
And it was like, I did what I usually do, which is just go, okay, let's look at what you've written so far. Mm-hmm. Probably the answer is somewhere in here and you don't know.
Yeah.
And so I went back and I just went, oh, the job I gave them was this. Oh, well, then they'd know this. Well, then you'd have to be in this. And logically, that would make sense. Boom. And if you read it, you'd go like, well, clearly you set up earlier this and this and this. I'll give you like the hint of like, it's a guy who's hiding. And I found out he's a real estate agent like earlier on. Mm. It's like, well, he's hiding in a house that they're not selling.
Okay.
Because where else would he hide?
Yeah.
It's a fully functioning house. Mm-hmm. So they go and they find him there.
Yeah. They know there's an empty house and they can use it.
Yeah.
They're not in the Vancouver market.
That's right. And I made it that the house was in the middle of nowhere, and then something horrible happens in that house, and it's nice then because, you know, the house can be left and blah, blah, blah. But yeah, you think like, well, clearly you were setting up, that's why they're real estate agents. Mm-hmm. And I was like, no, I was just trying to think of a job that this couple would have.
Yeah.
What's a job a couple would have? And my sister is a real estate agent, and so is her husband. And I'm like, it's a good couple-y job. You can do it from your home.
Yeah.
You know, and there you go. And it all filled in. But yeah, that's true.
That's a wonderful moment. Those little moments of
Don't try to think of what the new thing is. Yeah. Go like, what have you done so far? Mm-hmm. Well, it's going to probably tell you what the next thing is anyway, if you just go back and read it.
And it's wonderful. And you don't plan it. It's just this kind of moment of serendipity that you just can't plan for. But that makes writing so much fun, because when you hit that moment, you're just like, I am the best. I know what I'm doing. So a few pages later, you're like, oh, I suck. Fuck, I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah, and then you're trying to duplicate it like the next time and just go, how'd I do it? I don't know how I
did
it.
Yeah, it's impossible to
do. Uh-oh, and the answer is do it five times and you'll get it right once in five and you'll be fine.
And my problem as a person who'd like to be a writer is that I tend to think that it'd be better for me to think about it rather than write about it. And I'm actually terrible at that. I'm not a person who can think an answer through just sitting and think about it. I have to be writing it. Mm-hmm. That's the only way I can get the answer to a story problem. I could never think of half the ingenious things I've thought of just sitting in a chair going, what would he do then? It just doesn't work that way for me. My brain doesn't work that way.
The only people that do that are like people in 1930s movies who are writers. They sit down at the desk and just clack, 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 clack. No, I'd say that the way I write like longer things now is I'll because, you know, start at the beginning. And it's like, no, fuck that. you've got the idea for the scenes that you want.
Yeah.
Just write those scenes. Mm-hmm. Just write those scenes and just put those scenes aside.
Yeah.
And then like put them in general. general order, those scenes, and then the other stuff will fill itself in probably. Mm, yeah. And I was like, how did I get to this scene on the bridge?
Interesting.
Oh, well, he was driving. Why was he driving? Well, he was driving because he did it. Oh, yeah, that'll make sense. Da-da-da. Which then, you know, and then you got to get to your beginning and go like, okay, I've got to now establish this world. What's the easiest way to establish the tone?
Yeah.
Of what this is. And you've now shown yourself what the tone is with the scenes. So I'm like, okay, so how do we begin this that shows that this is the world we're going to be in that's maybe a little different than the world that we're in currently?
I assume when you write a story for Simpsons or Futurama that you have to do an outline for them before you actually write the full script. When you're writing for yourself, do you do an outline or do you just start in like with scenes and stuff like that that you've
I just start thought? With scenes, yeah.
So you don't have an general outline of the story at all?
No.
Interesting.
I mean, I've written two movie outlines and I almost find them a little crippling now because the fun parts are already written because they're so outlined, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So you're just like doing kind of workman's
just
shit.
Just mechanical stuff.
Yeah, instead of like organically going from this scene to this scene.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think they're fine and I'm trying to fill them in as I go. One is a big broad comedy and one is a riff on disaster movies because I was watching so many of those, like Earthquake and whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I've got one of those that I'm trying to write.
Because I think that's a problem with that outline to me is that I love the idea of organic characters that are changing the story, whether you want them to or not, because the story has to follow the characters. The characters can't follow the story.
Yeah.
You know, because the characters are, like, you are your story and your decisions make your story life or your life story, I should say. And it should be the same for characters. So when you have an outline, you have to kind of force things to happen in the story in order to, you know, like, you could reach a fork in the road where you're like, well, this character really would be like, do this. Like, would you be willing to throw your outline out in order to allow that character to follow its true nature?
I don't think you really have like an option if that's not what the character would do. Then
you'd have to throw it away.
It's false. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think I'd look at it as like, again, I'm not a parent, but I would look at it as like you and your daughters, you know, when they were younger. Like, what are we going to do today? We're going to go to the store. Then we're going to go over to here. We're going to go to the park for a bit. And we're going to go over here.
Yeah.
And that's the plan.
Yeah.
And you probably will do some of those things.
Yeah.
But you've got to be willing to throw that plan out because you got two kids and they have their own thing.
Yeah.
And they're agents of chaos.
Yeah.
And so, you know. Hey, Dad, can we stop for ice cream? Yeah, okay. And now that's gone sideways. And so that part didn't happen. And so we're going to have, you know, dinner later or we got to pick up something or whatever.
No, you're right.
Yeah, everything changes.
Exactly. Yeah.
But you had a general plan.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's still generally the story of you and the kids go out and have a day.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's going to be what it is.
It's going to be affected by the personalities in the story. And I think that's the most interesting part of it. Like, my objection to characters like Hannibal and stuff like that isn't that I don't like serial killers, is that I don't like characters that the author falls in love with. And because what happens then is that nothing can happen to the character. The character becomes a static being in the story. And everything around the story is designed to reflect glowingly on this character the author loves. And the stories become really dull. You know, it's kind of like when Dorothy L. Sayers, the mystery author, fell in love with her character, her mystery, like her detective character in her books. She fell in love with the character so much that she basically wrote herself into the stories and married that character. That's how much she loved the character.
Oh.
But the books became really dull because the character no longer was a human. He just became a sort of stand-in of ideal man to the author, you know. And so it's just dull because it's not a person anymore. It's a paragon of virtue who is this sort of perfect being according to what the author loved anyway. And so there was a lid on it, so all's good.
Fine.
I'll just throw it over here on the floor.
Sure.
There's no reality to it then, right? Like when the character reaches like a place where, oh, he would do this because this is his character. No, he won't because that would be bad for him to do that. So he has to be this perfect character. So he has to do this instead.
Yeah.
And that's boring.
Though, but with Hannibal, it was interesting because like Hannibal was pretty much a prequel to, you know, Red Dragon. It then got into that story.
Yeah.
But it was like basically a prequel. So you're like, well, what can happen? It's all set up.
Yeah.
It's all Smallville. It can all be whatever. But then when you watch the show, and I did end up watching.
Well, I'm talking about the books by Thomas Harris.
Oh, fair enough.
Not.
But the TV series, which was so stylish and so beautiful, it did end in a way that we're like, what? Well, yeah, it was like, fuck it. This is just where these characters ended up, and this is where they are, and this is what happens.
Yeah.
Well, that doesn't work with the other thing. Nope, that's the end of this. This was his own thing. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And just
fuck
right.
continuity.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fine. That's
how you do it.
That's a brave choice. But no, I'm more thinking about the books where Thomas Harris clearly loved the character so much that he just couldn't bear the idea that something bad would happen to Hannibal. And so it just becomes this sort of perfect guy. You know, he knows everything he knows about food, wine, music, clothes. He's just this sort of perfect. Besides being a perfect killing machine, he's also like this perfect man.
Do you read Hannibal's thoughts in these books? Does he speak his thoughts? And you're reading that.
Mm-hmm.
You do? So you're inside his head.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the problem. This is the thing about the Hannibal TV show, which I think was great. You just spent all this time on his eyes, and so you project your own thoughts into him.
Yeah.
And he doesn't. You know, he says something, but is that what he really means? You don't know.
Yeah.
So you're projecting your own things, and so it just gives you more depth than if you know you're reading a book and it's just like, oh, he's just telling you what he's thinking. It's like, no, that's no good.
Yeah.
You know, that's not a mysterious character. Mm-hmm. Why is that interesting?
I just couldn't believe that show. I just couldn't believe that serial killers have that much time to pose their victims. You know, it's just like, do they have 2 days to do this thing? I couldn't do that much work.
It's weird.
Do they have jobs?
I found the serial killing to be more believable than the cooking. How do you have time to present this kind of meal and make all the, put the, light all those candles? That's where you lost me. And yeah, and I'm not a big serial killer type fan of that kind of genre. It was just like, God damn, this is a beautiful looking show that's disturbing, and I'm not like, oh, God damn, it's so beautiful. And
I found it really boring.
Did you?
Yeah.
I thought it was so good looking.
Interesting.
So different than anything else. On
it
TV.
Was very different. Yeah, you're right. It was very different.
And then there was at one point, there was a fella, and I'm not going to say who it was, but I used to work with on a TV show.
Was it Grover?
Grover from Sesame Street?
Yeah.
Yeah. Remember when Grover from Sesame Street was on Hannibal?
Yeah. That was an interesting episode.
I'm trying to think now if they ever did a parody. They must have done a parody of Silence of the Lambs on Sesame Street. You think like they couldn't have, but they. I bet you they did. Mm. I bet you they did. By the way, the Twin Beaks one is very funny. no, there was a fella who I worked with on a kid's show, and he's in the show as a serial
Grover.
Killer. Lord. And he's in there as a serial killer, and he's very arrogant in the show, and
okay.
He's very arrogant in real life.
Oh,
like, ah, you got it. That's how he does. There you go. Yes. And then something horrible happens to him, and I'm like, well, I don't want that to be in real life, but it's fun to watch the fictional representation this go on. It's good. There's occasional times where there's someone who I've had issues with in my real life.
Yeah.
And because they're an actor, I get to watch them killed violently in movies.
Yeah.
Very cathartic.
Is that right? Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Jason Takes Manhattan.
Yeah.
Oh, it's delightful.
Maybe you should just get along with people more instead of being such a...
Oh, I do in real life? It's fine, but the fictional representations of them get killed no matter what. So why not enjoy? Why not enjoy? And there you go.
So you've never found it disturbing to see a person you know get killed in a movie or a TV show?
Well, I know it's not real.
Okay.
So, no.
All right.
I think one of the weirdest ones was this fellow I know, Gary. Not that Gary, but a different Gary.
Okay.
He's in The Fly 2.
Oh, yeah.
And he gets crushed by a mesh elevator. It's pretty gruesome.
Yeah. What a way to go.
Yeah. But it was so
potato
gruesome
masher.
And so weird that it did make me laugh out loud.
Okay.
Yes.
That's not a terrible movie.
The Fly 2?
Yeah.
All right. The Fly is so good.
The Fly, you cannot possibly
look,
be
hey,
better than
Psycho 2 is not a bad movie
but
either.
But it goes in its own
what
direction.
What are you going to do? What are you going to do? You know, I mean, you're still going to be Psycho 2, so what are you going to do?
Psycho 2 is pretty good.
That's what was the title of it, Psycho 2. What are you going to do?
Yeah, it's pretty good.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
It's fine, but it's not Psycho.
It's got a bit of fun to it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a different tone and everything. It's a lot different.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's okay. Like, I'd watch it again. I haven't seen it for 30
years. Yeah, it's like the New Testament.
But...
It's no Old Testament. You know, Old Testament. It's got Noah. It's got sacrificing children. It's got the beginning of everything. That's pretty good. Mm. And then you got the New Testament.
Yeah.
I mean, I like the characters.
Yeah.
But, you know, hey, when's something going to blow up?
Here's the thing, though. New Testament is 30% lighter.
That's true.
Yeah. It's got going for it.
That's the real good news.
It's the Diet Testament.
So we are well deep into this episode.
We are well. You're gonna call it.
Yeah, but I'm not gonna finish it because
you're not gonna finish it
because you gave me guff last time I did this.
Waiting for guff. Everyone, thank you for listening to our show. Good night, everyone.
You don't want to tell anyone how to reach us, right?
Oh, okay. Here's the thing. I love hearing from you guys. So please write to us. You can write to us on our comments board. That is on our website, which is called SneakyDragon.com. Much like this show, Sneaky Dragon. dot.
Oh, I didn't get com. That before.
Yeah, that's how I did it.
Well, wait a second. What came first, the website or the show?
The egg. Then
Dragon's egg?
Dragon's egg, that's right.
What a sneaky dragon.
Related to that, you can email us. That's fun to do. It's sneakyd at sneakydragon.com. What do you mean? What are you laughing at? You don't think it's fun?
It's fun to email?
Yeah.
I guess so.
It's sure. A laugh riot, I heard. You can go to Facebook. We have a Facebook page. We like to post funny things there that I don't usually see. But I did see one about Wonder Woman.
One I put up with some British kids hosts dressed as animals singing Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. Did you see that?
I did not. I was at work, so I didn't want to
stream that. That is nightmare fuel, man. But they all look like they've had terrible strokes.
I did like Jeremy's comment, his picture comment on it. Thank you for that. I laughed. And then what else? We have Twitter. It's a little thing that people do called Twitter. And we are sneaky_dragon. And that's all.
We're not on Snapchat, as we've mentioned.
We're not on Snapchat.
We are on Tumblr.
We are on Tumblr. We have a Patreon thing, and that's it.
Well, I'll just mention right now that, hey, if you guys like mixtapes based on stories from your life, Dave will make one if send us in a story. And you could send us an MP3 to our sneakyd at sneakydragon.com, as he said. But also, we also have Skype.
We do have Skype.
And that is... Sneaky Dragon, Sneaky just Dragon. Look for the image. Yeah. And what we're looking for are stories about 2 minutes long. Could be a secret origin story about something from your life.
Yeah.
Could be how you got into listening to Sneaky Dragon or where you listened to Sneaky Dragon.
I'm interested.
Could be the one that got away, something that got away from you in life.
We want to hear that.
You know, any of those kind of stories.
Sure. And then we'll add an amusing soundtrack that sort of comments or... What echoes or whatever your story.
And Dave will do that, and it'll be great.
It's fine.
And also, Dave is also looking for all of your Rich fan fiction.
Yes, that's right. Please direct me to any web pages you have that are full of Made in Money Richie Rich fanfic.
Yeah, we're not looking for the slash fiction.
I want slash fiction.
Okay, Dave wants the slash fiction of Richie Rich and Hot Stuff, the Little Devil. This stuff just writes itself. Please, let's just get... But please, just for legal reasons, age Richie up. To where he's 19 or older.
I guess.
Not you guess. You do. You do. Hot Stuff, Casper, they can be whatever.
You know, you guys do what you want.
Wendy is thousands of years old. We're fine. You get Richie up to 21.
Don't let me get in the way of your creativity.
Let the law get in the way of your creativity. Let's not have any of that. So age up. Listen, whatever you send us.
Yeah.
No, I'm not going to read it. But whatever you send Dave, we're just going to age those characters up and assume that you're talking that they're 21 or over.
Do you ever, when you read Richie Rich, did you think of him as being as young as he was? He always seemed like he was older than he was in the stories.
I always found his legs disturbingly plump.
He was a plump little boy. That's a great design, though. That Warren Kramer, who did the designs for those characters, he was a really good, really good artist.
Yeah, I love that style. He rocked those
shorts. I love that style that he had. It's great.
Well,
and that inking style is... the cat's pajamas. All right, everybody. I think we talked a lot about Richie Rich this episode. I feel like we maybe talked too much about Richie Rich, but I think we had some other interesting things in it.
We had a wealth of Richie Rich.
We talked about writing techniques, Ian's writing techniques. I thought that was very interesting. And I thought that I made some good jokes. I wish Ian had held up his end. All right, everyone. Good night.
Held up his end will be one of the slash fiction stories titles.
Nice.